I'd like to call this meeting to order. This is a regularly scheduled meeting, Tuesday, February 18th, 2014, of the Matanuska-Susitna Borough Assembly. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
I sure will. Jim Sykes.
Here.
Matthew Beck.
Here.
Ronald Arvin.
Here.
Steve Culligan.
Here.
Darcy Salmon.
Here.
Jim Culver.
Here.
Vern Halter. And Mr. Mayor, are you on the line?
I'm here.
We do have a quorum at the Assembly, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Item 3, approval of the agenda. Are there any comments on the agenda? Mr. Culligan.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, I would like to pull 140117 resolution. Consent agenda.
Off the consent agenda, Mr. Deputy Mayor, or is it being pulled from the agenda?
Are you removing this from the agenda, Mr. Culligan, or are you pulling it to speak to it later?
Pulling from the agenda.
Pulling it completely from the agenda.
That's correct.
Object.
It's a motion on the floor. Heard objection.
Hold on just a second. It is ready for you to vote. The motion that's on the floor is to pull resolution serial number 14017 completely from the agenda. Basically pulling it off for no action, correct?
Is there any discussion? Hearing none.
We got Assemblymember Sykes.
We brought this forward. I think we ought to consider it, so I'm going to vote against it.
Put your marks on the board. Yes, pulls it, postpones it indefinitely.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, it passed and the resolution has been taken off the agenda with Assemblymember Culver, Sykes, and Beck opposed.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Are there any other proposed changes to the agenda? Mr. Manager, you wanted to move something up in the queue on your manager's report?
Yes, sir. Just in, it's in order. We would like to make number 4, number 1 on the manager's report. Number 4, Port Mac rail presentation. We want to do that at the beginning so we can accommodate the clerk and her technical order.
Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Okay, Mr. Manager, that change has been made. Mr. Sykes.
Yes, I would like to move the mayor's veto to immediately after persons to be heard. There's been a lot of confusion on the ordinance that may be voted on or whether the veto is overridden or not, and some of the members of the public did not get a chance to speak to it, so I would ask that the veto be moved to after persons to be heard.
Persons to be heard or audience participation, Mr. Sykes?
Audience participation. Thank you.
Mr. Halter?
If we fail to override the mayor's veto,
what would be the status of this, Madam Clerk? Would it be on this tonight or at a future meeting?
Through the Deputy Mayor, through Assemblymember Halter, it would go tonight if the veto was not overridden. Basically, where the Assembly would be is with the main motion on the floor. You can either adopt it, fail it, amend it, after if the veto is failed to be overridden.
I would.
Mr. Sykes has proposed reshuffle of the queue for the veto. I'd like to remind the body that there has been a public hearing on this. So, somebody, Mr. Salmon.
I'm going to speak in opposition to the motion because I'm not interested in a new public hearing on the veto. I am interested, if it does come back before us, my motion at that point in time, for what it's worth, would be to postpone at time certain to the next meeting to give the public and yourselves an opportunity to review exactly what's before you. But in terms of this particular motion, I'm going to vote in opposition. Thank you.
Is there additional comment to rearranging the queue?
I'm going to support rearranging the queue. I think we can dispense with this tonight, and I think it's important that the certain comments and the staff weigh in on this. I was upset last time that I thought it needed to be heard and want to postpone it till this meeting because staff wasn't here to comment on their written comments, so I'd like to do it tonight.
I've heard objections, so please cast your vote.
And this is to move the veto after audience participation. Mr. Deputy Mayor, it passed with Assemblymember Solomon opposed.
Mr. Culver, did you have a comment?
I'd like to pull a couple items off the consent agenda.
Please proceed.
Item 1D, Resolution 1420 on the use of state retirement system funding, and then the AM, the only AM, 2A, item 2A, on the credit card agreement, so we can get some explanation on that.
Madam Clerk, will you please restate what Mr. Culver's pulled?
He's pulled from the consent agenda, Resolution Serial Number 14020 and AM Number 14017, both on page 4.
Is there objection? Oh, can't object. Sorry. It is so moved. Mr. Sykes.
No, I don't have so those two are being pulled? Okay. So I just want to be clear that item number 1A, resolution serial number 14-017, has already been pulled.
And taken off the agenda completely.
Oh, taken off the agenda completely. Okay. Thank you.
Changes to the agenda. Hearing none, that takes us to the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Stone, can you lead us in the pledge? Thank you, sir. Brings us to item 5, minutes of preceding meetings. Any comments or changes for the body? Seeing none, item 6, reports, correspondence, A, agency reports, reports from cities. Anybody here from Palmer or Wasilla or Houston? All at AML. Okay. Matanuskas is sitting in a borough. School district. Excuse me. To finish my sentence, Mr. Stone, please come forward. Thank you.
Yeah, good evening, Member Arvin and the rest of the assembly membership. My name is Gene Stone, and I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Matsu Borough School District. And on behalf of Dr. Promo, I just want to let everybody know that she's out with Luke Folp, our Assistant Superintendent for Business and Operations, and she's providing budget overviews and updates, just helping educate our community. So she's up north in Talkeetna. Yeah, just as a district, we continue to watch our legislative bills real closely. We're continuing to provide testimony as a district. At this time, we watch 278 very closely. That's the BSA. What that bill has a number of things in it, but of large interest is the $85 increase in BSA for next year, and then the following year, $58, the following year after that, $58. So, it's really the bottom line for next year, that would look like about a $2.5 million infusion of cash for the district. And so it gives us a little bit of relief in that structural deficit. So that's encouraging, and, we just continue to see some of that one-time money, and then also an increase in the BSA should put us in a little better position financially. So, I think I like Dr. Pomerl's approach in terms of, just continuing to do, work with our borough and work with our community and say that our sky's not falling, but we just want to continue to advocate for our kids and do the very best for our students. We're proud of our schools and the product that we produce. So thanks, everyone.
Mr. Stone? Quick question. Yeah. So the 3% potential ask for the increase to your budget this year, did that take into account already the $85 per student on the BSA, or how does that affect the 3% ask in your budget?
Yeah, the budget that we put forward at this time it operates on the assumption that of a 3% increase from the borough. If we did get the BSA increase, we would still assume that we would get a 3% increase, and so that would put us at about a $4.8 million structural deficit still.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to committee reports, Joint Assembly and School Board Committee on School Issues. No meeting. Okay. Moving on to Assembly Public Relations. Seeing none, carries us to manager's comments. And first in the queue is Point McKenzie Rail presentation. Mr. Manager, you have the floor.
Yes, good evening. Just wanted to show you that Joe Perkins is back in action. We're happy to have him here. Myself and Joe gave this presentation in front of the Joint House and Senate Transportation Committee, and we thought it might be profitable for you to kind of see the presentation. And in various forms, this presentation has been given approximately 45 times to different community groups, very heavy up in the Fairbanks area, which we're trying to get support from our port director and our economic development director. So we have been very, very active. This first thing here, you can kind of see, and this is a great shot. This was done in November 2012, and you can see the circular motion of the ice and how it kind of circulates and kind of breaks up. But this was done when we had the scrap metal shipment that went to South Korea. And this is unique because this is the first time there's been a shipment from Alaska directly to South Korea. Usually it goes to Seattle, loaded up, and then goes to Korea. By doing this way, we save 10 days off the delivery time. And of course, time is money. There's our opportunity. We're hanging out there so close to the Asian market that we do have a big economic development advantage to sell our resources. And this is really, really a key. And as you all are aware, we got 14 square miles of industrial space at Port McKenzie. We're not interfering with any resident, any recreational area. And this is really our opportunity. You can see how close we are to the Port of Anchorage. And we have just a tremendous opportunity. And that's what we've been preaching. We have a different port than the Port of Anchorage. Port of Anchorage is commodity. We are a resource development port. We have staging area with the 14 square miles. We also have 15 acres at our barge dock for storage of materials and onloading and offloading, and upland lease lots. There's ample room for any type of economic development, short-term opportunity or long-term opportunity. Northern Economics did a study that we would save over $100 million in transportation savings compared to other ports in Alaska just because we are so close to the interior. So that is why we have the importance of the rail project. That rail project will save these projects money. If resource development companies can reduce their costs, it makes our product so much more economically advantaged, and that's where the jobs are going to be created. Here are some past activities of the port. This is part of our heavy lift, as you can see. This is when they put down the 3 miles, two spools of cable that laid on the ocean floor for Fire Island. This was staged here. This is just a shot of onloading, of offloading equipment during this time. This is wood is coming in from Kodiak to one of our local sawmills. We have the opportunity on sending stuff out. This is cargo, our construction equipment going to central Alaska up to the Fairbanks area. And then this is the test shipment that we had in 2010 with coal. And this is a JP Azure. It's one of the biggest ships. So there's always question on, can we get ships in here? That ship would not fit through the Suez Canal. It's so large, but it fits there at Port McKenzie. And this is some activity that you see from our scrap metal that was done in November 2012. Going back to bulk resources, you see some... we have concrete material that's being shipped in timber. Because we were able to bring that the limestone in for concrete, we were able to really make a market change and reduce the cost. And, I mean, that helps us here in the valley and then also through throughout Alaska. This is why our port has the opportunity. It's a 110-car rail loop. Makes it efficient, so... Other ports, you have to unhook, you have to move equipment in and out. We have a very good opportunity to have that in place. And this is a site when we did the groundbreaking up at the Knob this past fall. This is the area that you've overlooked and had that great view from. These are exports. Going here, as you can see, we can get to Incheon and Shanghai, Yokohama. That's where we think our good market, good opportunity in our market is for our natural resources. Project port, one of the items that's going to be coming up for us at Working Hard is a natural gas project. We can benefit by having the materials come through the Port of McKenzie. We can benefit by having that line come through and be a part of Port McKenzie and then the opportunity for actually having an LNG type plant at the port. This is why we're working. This will create jobs and can give opportunity. And as we talked about earlier today, as far as not having revenue being earned right now at the port, this changes everything. So it's really important to get this rail done. Imports, the same thing, and that's something when Don Dyer has been out and made the presentations to the Fairbanks area, this is what they are excited about, on being able to get stuff into the interior, and this is going to be a quicker way for us to do so. 32 miles from this point gets us to Houston, which gets us to the main line of the Alaska Railroad, and not ironically, but taking advantage of this, the city of Houston is really planning an industrial park right around the Y where the Port Mac Rail connects to the main line. Fuel shipments. This is probably our biggest success story. This is Central Alaska Energy. It's a 7 million gallon fuel tank. And this is done by the same group that 2 years ago, I don't know if you remember, but they're having problems with a fuel problem up in Nome, Alaska. These are the guys who brought fuel across the ice and really kind of got them out of a jam. It's the same people that are doing this. They're providing low sulfur diesel fuel. And the last week or so, there's been some talk in the press about how this project has really hurt and killed Flint Hills. First, there needs to be a correction. The low sulfur fuel, diesel fuel, is being brought in here is not produced. It was never intended or has not been produced by Flint Hills. So it's a totally different fuel source that they don't make. So that's the first misnomer. The second thing is Ada kind of got thrown in on why, you know, the state government was aiding and doing this project to kill another business. Ada is a great vehicle. It looks at business and business opportunities, and they loan money to qualified businesses, and it has to be paid back at an interest rate. They come in, and Ada is great, and we want to continue to use them to really make these projects happen. A $7 million project would be difficult to have a local bank do, and Ada steps in and does it, and they are really the real champion on helping getting these projects done. So we provide the infrastructure, we have a partner in Ada, and then we have entrepreneurs like Central Alaska Energy, Mark Smith, and Justin Sharon, who actually step up and you know, put their reputations and business acumen on the line to get these things done. This project will really drive down the cost for all of us for fuel. Transportation costs will be lower, which means the stuff we buy will be lower. And we're assuming and planning for more projects like this to move forward. We talked a little bit about Project Cargo before. Westpac Terminals, another local company who have signed up, and both Central Alaska Energy and Westpac are here because the rail is coming, and they jumped ahead of the game. Westpac is going to be providing regular monthly service between our port and Seattle for cargo, specifically coming in and opportunities for the interior. For mining development, we have coal opportunities. We have copper opportunities that are actually happening now. And they have the ability, on a business calling up saying, we need stuff delivered, they can put it together as opposed to businesses trying to figure out how to do so. Kind of like I spoke last week with the Realtor Association on what's happening. And the way I explained this to them is you have people who have a house for sale, people who want to buy a house. If there was nobody in the middle like a realtor to open up that market and do the paperwork and make sure everybody got taken care of, stuff would not happen. Realtors are very important in the selling of a house and buying of a house project, just like Westpac is in delivering goods and services from one company selling to another company. Mineral development, Amber Mine is one opportunity that, you know, that we have. Many opportunities along the current rail belt. These are all projected. We know there's deposits there. At this point in time, there has not been an easy way to get the product out. And Fort McKenzie will assist in that and encourage that development. These are the folks that have kind of signed up and saying, you know what, we're all in with the Port McKenzie Rail Project, and we see a huge advantage to having this go forward. These are the companies that we have discussed and would be putting traffic on the rail once it is complete. The challenge we have on actually signing people up, we don't know if the rail is going to be ready to go at the end of 2016 or 2018 or 19. It's all really depending on the money we receive from the state of Alaska through appropriation. And that's always been a challenge. And Joe's going to talk about how successful we've been in the past and our history on that. So, Joe, you're up.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back here addressing you all and talking about the rail project.
Well, we're glad to see you up on your feet. Welcome back.
Well, I've sort of graduated from the walker, from the cane to I hope I can make it through all of this, but I think I can. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on the rail construction. As some of you are aware, I think everybody here has seen this chart before, but in the early stages of this project, we broke the project down into six major segments for construction of embankment and two segments for going in and leveling the embankment, putting in ties, rails, and so on. And we monitor all of our costs and our schedule by these segments. And as far as the segments are concerned right now, the segments that are under construction is segment one, which starts down by the port, by the loop. It is somewhere around 80% complete. We'll finish this summer. Segment three, which you can see marked on there, is also under construction. It's about 85% done. Segment four has just got started. We're in the midst right now of clearing and grubbing, and it's about 5% complete. And segment six, which is the Y at the top that allows the trains to go both ways, both toward Anchorage and toward Fairbanks, is about 85% constructed. Now, the Y on segment six is interesting because at the end of this briefing, I'll show you a picture, but we are actually laying ties and rail on that segment because we're going to use segment six as a storage area for ballast, ties, and track for the rest of the line, and we want to be able to back trains into that Y so we can unload them and save hopefully some money on the cost. In addition to that, there are a lot of other things going on that are smaller pieces of this project. For instance, for those of you who stay up with the work in Houston, we've got permission to put up a new tower in Houston, $1 million tower to extend the rail communications on down this line. And we also have done one other thing during the environmental process, and I'm sure many of you had to address this. Trails were a major, major item of concern on what we were going to do with trails. Well, out of that process come this plan of which trails we will be upgrading and fixing up. And I'm happy to tell you that we got about a $600,000 contract out there right now to upgrade many of the trails in that area, and that work is currently underway. Now, with regard to that, we plan on the 19th of March, if you haven't heard enough tonight, we will have a public information briefing up at Houston Middle School from 6 to 8, and we will have all of the management staff there. We'll have the engineers, the right-of-way folks. And in addition to that, we will have all of the contractors there, so anybody interested in working on this project can certainly go to Houston Middle School on the 19th of March and get the status. So I encourage any of you that want to learn more about this project or have questions to please attend that. This is the aerial of the loop as it looks right now. This is a major structure. This is a contractor's yard down by the loop and a view of the port. This just shows some of the heavy equipment that was working. We've moved something like 6 million cubic yards of material already on this project. This shows some of the bridge construction. There are six bridges on the project. This is one of them. And this is on segment one. And that bridge now is complete. And we are moving on. This is in segment three, the log storage area. We salvage the logs. They're commercially for sale if you want to buy them from the borough. This is just shots. This is the end of segment three. And that's where segment four takes off to the right. This is the why I was talking about, and this shows the main line and the tracks that lead off of the main line. And there's a good shot of showing the why and the main line. In doing that, we had to replace the bridge across the Little Susitna River. There is a siding, about a mile and a half siding, that we are putting in there so we can hold the train. And to do that, we had to put another track in, and we replaced the bridge across the Little Sioux. It's now complete. That's the new bridge. And that's an improvement for the railroad, because that older bridge is now going to be the siding. The new bridge will be the main line for the railroad. So we are moving it around a little bit, and the railroad is gaining some things there. We had over 200 people at the peak last year. These are mainly operators, and we, in fact, took most of the operators out of the entire state. And a lot of contractors were complaining because we had hired most of the operators. Now, this is going to also hold true for this next summer, at least the first part of it. So far, we've had $171 million appropriated with six separate appropriations and one GO bond issue. And I thought I'd sort of show you the way this project funding has happened. And you can see it started in 2008, and we've already been through 7 years of it. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it all the way through this as it keeps stretching out. We have asked for $60 million in 2015, and that was you all's request to the legislature. And then we would need another $40 million in 2016 to finish it. And as the manager pointed out, completion date is totally dependent on how much money we get. And you can see here that it's stretched out sizably already. This just shows you graphically some of the full length of the rail line. And this shows you what's currently funded. This throws the GO bond in. And you can see we've got well over two-thirds of it funded and under construction. And we need $101.5 to finish it. And what we need the money to finish it for is segment number 5 and segment number 2. And that's what we will do with the $60 million we get, is to do those two segments, plus we will be buying track ties and that kind of stuff with the $60
million. Hey, Joe.
Yes, sir.
So through the GO bond appropriation, are all six of the bridges funded, or are there, because those are pretty heavy lifts, right?
Yes, we fund the bridges along with the segments. When we put the contract out, the bridge is in. So all of the bridges are now funded,
okay,
with the exception of two. There's two overpasses. There's an overpass down the farm district that we have to put in yet. So I don't know who we'll call those bridges. So there would be those two. Other than that, everything's funded and under construction. This is a shot, and the rail folks are pretty hardy folks. This is the railroad zone workers, and they are in the midst of laying track for the Y, and they're out there right now doing this to get this Y in so that we can run trains down the Y. Many of you were here at this event. You can pick yourself out. Our groundbreaking on June 4th, this last year. I would also like to invite everybody to, we'll set up something as soon as the weather gets nice and you can see something out there, right? A lot of snow on right now, but we'll try to set up a visit and a briefing on site to go over this whole thing as soon as the weather gets up to where we can see what we're doing. And that concludes my briefing. Do we have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Are there questions from the body? Seeing none, thank you very kindly.
Thank you very much. And let me say one other thing before I leave. I want to compliment the staff, the doctors, and the nurses at the hospital you have out here. They were outstanding, and I'm absolutely positive they saved my bacon. So you all are lucky to have a facility like that, I think, with the experience that I had. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Manager.
Yes, I have a few more items. First, got back late last night from Juneau. Had opportunity to work and speak with each of our delegation members and reiterate our priority list and be there to answer any details. They are continually preaching that this is going to be a very tight budget with the revenue projections and a skinny capital improvement year. So we will be down there and making sure that we take advantage of every opportunity we can, as slim as it may be. Also, too, just want to inform you and the public and encourage you to attend. There's going to be a Valley Town Hall with a few of our legislators. We know Representative Gaddis and Senator Dunleavy will be there. It's going to be Saturday at the Wasilla Middle School from 10 a.m. to noon. And this is a chance for the public to address Representative Gaddis and Senator Dunleavy, and the other Valley delegation has been invited, but we do not have a confirmation list yet. Also, to
Mr. Manager, that's this Saturday, the 22nd?
That is correct, yes. 10 a.m., Wasilla Middle School. Also, this Sunday, we have our first in a long time tri-borough meeting with North Star Borough, Denali Borough, and ourself. I know the president of the railroad will be there. We'll be discussing joint cooperation and economic opportunities, and that's going to be Sunday at 6:30 a.m., or is it 9 a.m.? So it's a long drive to get there on that time, so you have to leave in the middle of the night for that one. Next, we have our MAPSU Career and Technical School Edition presentation by MCG.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Michael Carlson. I'm the Carlson and McCool Carlson Green. And we'll keep our presentation fairly short tonight. Just got a few slides. I do have the plans at the end if anybody wants some more detail, but you guys have seen it before and things are going well. So just wanted to get you up to date. I'll have to turn to look at my slides. Okay, so the overall program was based on the existing school and basically expansion of that school to 800 students. They're roughly 500. They're actually over capacity. They're over 500 now. And adding three new pathways and a media center. The pathways are natural resources, human services, and then transportation. The addition itself is 33,000 square feet, and the budget construction budget is $12.5 million. We are on schedule. The project will be bidding in a few weeks, and this is right now we're in our final reviews with the maintenance folks in the borough. In the school district, that process is ongoing. We'll be out to bid in March, and construction will start in May, and by fall semester of 2015, they'll be in the new addition. The school, of course, will continue to operate while the construction is happening. We've got the site zoned out. It'll work pretty well for them. We did receive bids on another school today, and the bidding climate seems to be pretty good. Came in very well, so we're anticipating no particular problems. Hopefully get a lot of value for our money with this project. I'm sure we will. This is just an overview of the project. In the upper portion is the existing school, and the lower left is the addition. You can see that it integrates quite nicely with the existing school. When we open this thing up, there'll be the new addition will be very much indistinguishable from the existing school, so it will be well integrated, one of our primary goals in terms of design. And just a couple looks at it. This is looking at the entryway. You can see the existing entry canopy on the right and then the addition on the left. And then inside, the new media center that connects the new pathways to the existing school. And so we are in the process of, it's submitted for permits. We're getting the permits in place. We're going to go out to bid. And as I said, I can give you more details if you want, but we just wanted to keep it short since it wasn't necessarily a lot to report.
Any questions from the body? No? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
I'll leave this here.
Also like to point out Robert Scott. Robert Scott is our project manager on there, and we're fortunate to have him. He is working hard on this project to make sure it's on time, if in budget, and we have a lot of confidence in Robert, and he will. He has no problem coming to the assembly as long as he doesn't have to speak. So, but Robert does a great job for us.
Come up here. We have some questions for you.
Next, we have Mike Brown, who does like to talk to the assembly and take anything you can throw at him.
That's awesome. Good evening, Deputy Mayor and Assembly members. Mike Brown from the Capital Projects Department. Real quick update, too, on the CTHS addition. That was your 95% design review. That will be going to the school board tomorrow night. So that'll kind of wrap things up. So just to let you know that that's happening as well. Tonight, I'm just going to give you a quick update on the road bond projects or the road projects in general, actually, as a product of our last time I came before you in January 21st. Specifically, I'm going to talk to you about the approach for accelerating bid awards, which was the request of the body on January 21st for the road projects that are currently in the design phase. Basically, the direction was given was to take a look at the bid dates and see what can be done to adjust the process to get projects out for award and started in the June timeframe. So I'll lay that out for you. I also want to briefly discuss our approach for right-of-way acquisition, so you'll have some idea of what that entails, but I am going to hit it at the very high level just to kind of breeze through that so that you have some understanding of how we're proceeding with regards to that. And then I'll provide you the revised dates based on this approach. So this accelerated approach, I guess, as I'm calling it, the typical approach is to bid out road projects following right-of-way acquisition being completed or certified. In this case, we're going to bid out the road projects prior to right-of-way certification, essentially to allow the bidding process to be accomplished in parallel with the right-of-way acquisition process. The benefit, of course, is that it gets them there faster. The staff will still have the ability to time the notice to proceed to the contractor, and there will not be a delay in having to get the legislation together to authorize a contract once right-of-way is complete. So that's the benefit of doing it this way. We do have the ability to issue a limited notice to proceed, authorizing work that does not require right-of-way certification. So, for example, if we had to replace a culvert in one of the road projects, we could issue a limited notice to proceed to the contractor, go ahead and get those materials on order, even though the right-of-way has not been certified. We will also include a statement in the bid that states that full execution of the contract is dependent upon certification of the right-of-way. We will also adjust the language to require the non-awarded bids to be valid for a longer period of time. Typically, we ask that those be valid for 60 days. We're going to take a look at seeing about having those bids being valid for a period of potentially 75 to 90 days to allow right-of-way acquisition to complete. And then we'll also ask bidders to give us a delay cost. So in the event we end up with a delay in right-of-way acquisition, to have some sense of what that delay cost could potentially incur. Briefly on the right-of-way acquisition
If I might interrupt.
Yes, sir.
Can you back up one slide?
Sure.
So if you're going to ask the contractor for delay claims regarding right-of-way, is that part of your evaluation on award?
I don't know that we'll necessarily we're still looking for low bid. And that would not be factored into the bid itself. What we want to have is a sense of what those costs would be. For example, if we were looking to proceed by the 15th of July, and we were to delay until the 1st of August, would there be a potential delay cost in starting, or if we were just to cancel the contract altogether? So what we want to have is just some idea of what those costs would be in the event that we end up in a situation where we're not able to execute the contract in a timely fashion. Correct. Yes. And it'll be part of the when the bid goes out, when the bid is issued. Does that answer your question, sir? Okay. So as far as the right-of-way acquisition process, really the intent of this slide is simply just to provide you a very brief overview. And I'm going to give you the three key points in the event that you can't read the graphic, but I think you can probably see it in front of you okay. Typically speaking, prior to appraisals being complete, we provide initial notification to affected property owners. So we'll basically, before we make our initial offer, we'll let them know there is a piece of property, part of their property, that would be needed for this road project or specific road project. Following completion of appraisals of property required for the road project, the process allows for three official offers or contacts to affected property owners. We would typically like to allow for 30 days in between the offers just to slow the process down, allow folks to consider the offers that are before them. In the case of the Selden and Lucille project and the Selden Extension project, we intend to contact property owners within 2 weeks of each offer or contact. So again, we're trying to move this forward as obviously we have a limited construction season. If after three contacts or offers, we cannot reach an agreement, then we would consider issuing notice of intent to begin condemnation. However, at this point, we do not anticipate approaching condemnation on any of the acquisitions at this point. So that's kind of how the process works in a very general sense. Really, it's just to give you an idea of how that works in the event that any of your constituents call you with any questions or concerns. We will be looking at three offers following initial notification and in about a two-week period in between each of those official offers or contacts. Okay, so this is the slide you're looking for, I think. This slide depicts the nine projects that are currently being prepared for bids. And in order to meet the intent to get the project started in June, we have adjusted the date for issuing the bid for four of the projects and to have them before the assembly prior to or by June. Those are the dates that are highlighted in yellow. So essentially what yellow shows you is the bid issuant date and an assembly award date were shifted to the left by 3 weeks for Vine Road, 2 weeks for Solomon Caudill, three for Selden and Lucille, and 4 weeks for Clapmack. So that's what we've done to kind of adjust the process to get those four projects and basically bring those forward in time. Now, having said that, Mockin Road, that went out for bid. The bid issuance went out today. So that one's on the street right now for bids. Vine Road bid documents were provided to purchasing today, so those should be out on the street by probably mid to late next week. Selden Extension, as you see, will go out at the beginning of March as well. Bogard will go out once DOT's review is complete and comments are addressed. Because of the nature of how that initial grant was provided to the borough, in the terms of reference agreement, we do have to allow DOT a window to provide their review on that road project. So they're taking a look at that design. Those full plan sets are being provided to DOT this week. I think that wraps it up, subject to your questions.
Questions from the body? Can you go back one slide?
Yes, sir.
Please. How long does DOT need to review Bogard?
By the TORA, it states 40 days. I've talked to DOT. We think they're going to move that faster. They had an original review of that project in 2010. They provided comments. Those comments will be addressed. So this is the design hasn't changed that significantly since the 2010 review, believe it or not. So I still anticipate we should be able to get that out by the end of March. We'll monitor the review closely. We've talked to DOT. They have no interest in slowing down our process. They understand our desire and your desire to get this thing, get this road project out for bid. But according to the TORA, to give you an answer, it's 40 days is what the TORA reads.
Okay. And then the yellow blocks, those are pushing back.
Moving the schedule forward to the left. Moving it up.
Moving it up.
To the left. Like, for example, previously on Vine Road, it was initially the bid issuance was 3 weeks later than the 3rd of March, so whatever that ends up being.
Okay.
So what we did is shifted those to the left with the intent of getting them before the assembly for award on those assembly award dates, which are either, for CLAP-MAC, it's actually in June, but for those other three projects, it gets them to an award in the May timeframe so that they can get started in the June timeframe, assuming that right-of-way has been completed.
Thank you very much. Mr. Culver.
What's the minimum amount of time, Mike, for between bid day and award day? Most of these look like 3 weeks.
Through the Deputy Mayor to Assemblymember Culver, I believe, according to code, it's 21 days. With the larger projects, we're trying to get it up to about a month just to provide the best window for review. But I think by code, we're required to keep it out for 21 days.
I was referring to the assembly award date from when the bids come in. What's the quickest turnaround we could do on that?
I think we would want the protest period to expire, which I believe is 3 days and then 3 days for an appeal. So we would probably a six-day window, business day window, after bid opening. So if there is a budget meeting or some other event and there's no protest, assuming, we can bring that to the body for vote and approval.
And my point is, Mr. Deputy Mayor, is that there's probably some flexibility in this schedule. We could probably shave another week off, because then there'd be another week for them to bring in their bonds and get the notice to proceed at least, so that they can get going.
And I agree. What we proposed was just based on the published schedule at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Okay. You're moving them up in the queue. That's great.
Working it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One last comment before we go back to the important part of the meeting. Mayor DeVilbiss is not here in attendance physically because he is in Juneau at the AML. Next week, Don Dyer and Mayor DeVilbiss will be given a presentation regarding the value of the port, rail, and bridge project to the Legislative Economic Development Committee. And Matthew Beck will be going down there and working with our lobbyist, John Harris, to kind of carry the message on help us out. So we have a lot of activity in Juneau to try to push these issues on the importance of our projects with the state.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. That brings us to item D, attorney comments. Mr. Ashtonbrenner.
No comments this evening.
Thank you. Madam Clerk.
The clerk's report is in your red folder. There was a request earlier in the day from administration to schedule a meeting on March 18th at 4 p.m. to further discuss the economic possibilities of an economic development corporation. Is that a meeting the assembly wants to schedule?
No. Can we do that at budget time? It would be more appropriate then when we're considering if we're going to do appropriations for that.
I'd refer to Mr. Moosey.
Mr. Moosey, please proceed.
Yes, the purpose of the discussion, and I know you don't want an extra meeting, the purpose of the discussion is to bring the groups together and have that discussion before a report is finished and moves forward. To do it the other way would mean the report is done and direction may change based on discussions you have with our various economic development groups. So I know you don't want another meeting, but I would ask, please, for consideration of the March 18th meeting.
What's the pleasure?
Is there still objection? I'll have to vote on it, Mr. Deputy Mayor, if there's objection.
Can you please state the question again?
The question is to schedule a March 18th, 4 p.m. meeting to further discuss the possibilities of an economic development corporation.
Put it on the board. Yes or no? Vote it up or down. There's been objection.
It passed with Assemblymember Culver, Salmon, and Arvin opposed.
Motion on the floor to amend to 5 p.m.
Was he joking?
Is there objection? There's objection. Please put it on the board.
Hold on. Bear with me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What? Yes for 5 or no for 5?
It would be yes for five. Assemblymember Halter, can I have you push your button again? And, Mr. Mayor, that failed. Assemblymember Culver, Halter, and Arvin in favor. So we are still scheduled March 18th, 4 p.m. And just so everybody knows, so I can advise the Assembly, I am going to be out of the office March 24th through April 4th, and Jamie Newman will be acting while I am gone.
Is that all, Madam Clerk?
That is it.
Thank you. Please hold the chitter-chatter down, Mr. Culligan.
So I have a question for the clerk. So last week or so, the precincts were released by the state. So if you give us a status and a plan of adjusting our assembly boundaries to fix our problems.
I know the lady from GIS that is going to help me work on that got back from vacation today. My plan is to get with her tomorrow, create a schedule. What I would like to do is get those assembly districts redrawn, overlaid, so I can report back to you and get those assembly districts redrawn. I would like to have that done by mid-March, I'm hoping, if we can get working on it as quickly as possible, and then get possibly legislation done and brought to the assembly sometime in April.
Next item on the agenda is item F, citizen and other correspondence. Any comments from the body? Seeing none, item G, no IMs, no unfinished business. Brings us to item 8, veto on the motion to postpone indefinitely. Madam Clerk.
That got postponed until later in the meeting after audience participation, Mr. Deputy Mayor, so I think we are on public hearings right now.
Thank you very kindly. Special orders, A, B, public hearing. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 0 number 14023, an ordinance amending MSB 2415-050 adoption and MSB 2415-060 voluntary release with accompanying resolution 0 number 14016, a resolution revising the animal care and regulation facilities fee schedule. And she is.
There is a sign-up list. Three people have signed up. Kaylee Orthman with Angia Anderson in the queue. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Kelly Orthman. I'm a resident of Wasilla, and I'm also a volunteer with Clear Creek Cat Rescue. Last year, our group rescued over 360 cats from South Central Alaska, many from the Matsu Borough Shelter. And I'm here tonight to ask the Borough Assembly to respectfully postpone consideration and adoption of the shelter's proposed fee schedule revisions. And this is because there's been no time for our rescue groups and other concerned citizens to ask questions about or make comments on those changes. A postponement and a time extension would allow the rescue groups and citizens to provide the valuable input that I think would be beneficial to all parties involved, the shelter management, the rescue groups, citizens, and, of course, the animals whose lives are at stake. So I thank you for your thoughtful consideration of that postponement. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Culligan?
Just a question. What is, in your mind, a reasonable amount of time if it was to be postponed?
We were hoping for around a month would be reasonable for that input.
Next in the queue is Algina Anderson, I think it is. Not seeing that individual, Rhonda Weinrich. Please come forward.
Good evening. I'm Rhonda Weinrich. I live in Wasilla. I'm the owner and president of AK Cat. I'm a small kitten rescue. I'm also asking for the postponement in order to get a work session in with the rescues and the shelter manager or whoever's doing this When I've been coming here all these meetings, this is absolutely not what I had in mind. Raising the prices is only going to make it a little more difficult for us. I don't normally rescue from the shelter, and I lost over $8,000 in my own personal money last year. Over a year ago, we had a discussion about a discount in free cats. There were like, I don't know, 30, 40 cats that went to Fairbanks to a known hoarder, and I provided the borough with all the documents from Fairbanks. Now we're asking, now 24.15.050, the shelter manager is asking to be able to waive at her discretion. Obviously, that's what she's been doing up until this point anyway. Last week, I was getting emails from a guy in Nikiski, Tim Colbath. He's one of the principals in Alaska Extended Life Animal Sanctuary, and he's been rescuing from the shelter. And he sent me a pretty nasty email, and he followed it up by a phone call yesterday saying that Carol Vardaman had spoken directly to him and told him that I was the one that was responsible for all the prices going up in the shelter. His letter states that he travels almost 500 miles, spending $145 on fuel alone, 11 hours average trip time. And he said he gets a discount with all his rescues. You know, if the borough is going to be giving discounts, they should be giving discounts to the people that actually pay the taxes here. I find that it's just kind of ludicrous that we're offering discounts to people that aren't supporting the employees here. I don't think it's appropriate to name me. One other thing I have to say is the last time I went to the shelter, there were 31 cats in quarantine. There were only four adoptable on the floor. At that particular day, I had 60 in my facility. I'm a one-person facility, and none of mine were sick. So, and I'm not a vet, so there's something definitely wrong. If the shelter employees were actually adopting animals, you wouldn't need us to be bothering you. We're just trying to help. But you're going to cause us a lot more financial problems if you're raising the price to us. I don't understand where it's, if she's waiving this at her discretion, that's going to be fair to anybody. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else that would like to speak to this? Seeing none, please come forward. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Diane Woodruff, and I just hadn't planned to speak to this, but I do think it would be good to postpone this. Clearly, the rescue groups have not had a chance to weigh in appropriately, and there are some issues over at the shelter that really should be addressed. When I was there last, and in fact, I've adopted an animal from there in the last 4 months, the procedures over there were a little scary to me. And it's really not a surprise to me that they've got some issues with the disease going on, just because of the lack of cleanliness and the lack of staffing that monitors what's going on. Pretty much the public has free rein at the facility, and the staff clearly does not understand what happens there on a number of occasions. I asked a number of questions and got some really wrong answers, and Ms. Vardaman sent some pretty snippy emails to me personally and has also been on the radio in a way that was inappropriate. So I think it might be good for this body to sit in on a meeting or two between the groups and maybe take note of what's going on over there. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else that would like to come forward and speak on this issue? Seeing none, I'll give it to Mr. Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor Arvin. I move to adopt ordinance serial number 14-023 and resolution serial number 14-024. And at the same time, I'd like to make a motion that this be postponed until March 18th.
It's on the floor with an amendment for the motion to postpone till the 18th. Mr. Solomon, then Mr. Sykes.
Mr. Mayor, for the record, it's resolution 14016. Not ordinance serial number 14024. That's a separate public hearing.
My apologies, I misread it.
Just wanted to clear it for the record.
Thank you for the correction.
Mr. Solomon, Mr. Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I would like to amend the amendment to make it the first meeting in April, which would be actually April 1st. I actually ran into a vet and somebody who is a cat rescuer yesterday, and they said that a month would be what might be required to get the groups together to consider it. And I had some questions about the fee schedule. If there's staff here, I can ask them. But if it's going to be delayed, maybe they can get ironed out anyway. So I'd make amendment to April 1st.
There's a primary amendment on the floor to the first. Mr. Beck, to the primary amendment.
I'd be willing to change my primary amendment to match what Mr. Sykes just stated.
Well, since we've got him on the floor, maybe let's just take up the primary amendment to April 1st. Is there objection? Hearing none, the primary amendment passes. The ordinance as amended to April the 1st, is there any objection? Postponement? Mr. Culligan?
I don't want to speak of objection. I'd like to just make sure that we direct a manager and staff to coordinate that meeting before that next assembly meeting. Along with that directive.
You're asking the manager to coordinate a work session between animal care and the rescue groups?
Correct, and invite a few assembly people if they want to participate.
Mr. Manager? Mr. Solomon?
Just simply as a point of order, you have to move on the postponement, then direct the manager after the fact, but I'll go with the way it went.
Main motion as amended on the floor. Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's postponed till the meeting of April 1st with the manager in the interim coordinating a work session meeting between the rescue groups and animal control. Thank you. Next item, Madam Clerk.
Ordinance serial number 14024, an ordinance amending MSB 4.05030A relating to appointments to boards and commissions.
Is there anybody wanting to speak to this? Anybody signed up? Don't see anybody. Mr. Solomon, will you please put it on the floor?
Yes, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I move ordinance serial number 14-024.
Any discussion? Objection? Seeing none, ordinance serial number 14-024 carries. Let's take a 5-minute at ease here. We'll come back at 7:15. 7 minutes. Audience participation. You can come and address the body on any issue that you may have on your mind as long as it's civil and doesn't raise too many hackles. So with that being said, I'd like to call the first person and then name the name of the second person to speak. And please come forward if you're second in the queue and be prepared to so we can move through this. We've got a pretty long list. Carolyn Johnson, followed by Andy Anderson. And when you come up, please state your name for the record in case I've gotten it wrong.
My name is Carolyn Johnson. I am a resident of the Palmer area. And I hope the mayor is still on the line because I wish to thank him for not disappointing me and helping me win a steak dinner. Some of my friends told me that I should apply for the animal control board position. And I told them that, no, there was no sense of trying because the mayor would never appoint me because I'm too outspoken and I'm not a lockstep participant. And so thank you, Mayor. You got me my steak dinner. I also had occasion to talk yesterday with Tim Colbarth from down in Nikiski, and he was telling me about his discount for rescued cats, and the discount was for mileage. And I think it's pretty despicable that a borough manager would give a discount to a non-borough resident over a borough residence. I think it brings in question that manager's professional judgment, if not her ethics. Someone mentioned earlier about the problem of disease within animal control, and she's absolutely right. One of the problems I see is that the animal control has no written policies or procedures. My every attempt to find such or see such has been referred to, oh, we follow Title 24. Title 24 is code. It is not policies and procedures. And as far as I can ascertain, that facility has no written policies or procedures. So it's no wonder that things are running awry. There's no policy for following the fee schedules that you people set. She's free rein to do whatever she wishes. Mr. Colbarth from Nikiski also told me that he was interested in the position on the Animal Control Board. And I reminded him that he was not a borough resident. He says, well, that's no problem. I have on my board, he runs a rescue, on my board, a resident of Palmer, and I can get a proxy through her anytime I want and be named to the board. So that's just a heads up for you guys. But thank you, Mr. Mayor. I get my steak dinner.
Thank you for your testimony. Andy, followed by Shannon Pendergrass.
All right. We sat down about a year ago with the Borough Planning Commission, and
Please state your name.
Andy Anderson. Thank you. And I addressed my concerns with how the racetrack regulations were written. The first concern I had was that how it's written, it says if you are practicing for an event more than 7 days a year, your property is considered a racetrack. And that put anybody that is practicing for any event in the state of Alaska's property rights different than anybody else's. And I think that's infringing on a property rights of anybody that competes in any events in the state of Alaska. The word commercial was used in there for no commercial racetrack used by motorized vehicles carrying people on land, ice, or snow in order to differentiate between a private landowner just trying to operate a vehicle on his land and a commercial racetrack that's actually charging for people to come in and use their land. And so that's where the whole commercial thing came from, was we were trying to figure out a way to differentiate between just somebody privately using their land. You know, you look at us and we've got 14 kids between me, my sister, and my brother that all run their little bikes around on our 80 acres we got. And they're not at an age where we can just send them out to go run up all around Sutton and the Coal Hills and enjoy that kind of area. And so they do use our private property, 80 acres, quite a bit. And under the current code, where our property would have to have 8-foot-tall fences and follow the whole racetrack regulations just because we also race at the Anchorage Racing Lions and Kenai and Fairbanks on their racetracks. So because these kids race, our property rights are different than the guys next to us. And that's hard, something hard to grasp when you've got people from Anchorage coming out operating 24/7, don't have any sound ordinances to follow, they don't have any rules to follow, and us as private landowners in Sutton can only start our bikes on our property 7 days a year before we have to follow all these rules. And so I just wanted to make sure that you guys understood that that was why commercial was added in there, and that I don't think it was intended to take the private property rights away from any racers. I think it was wrote in a different manner. That's it.
Thank you.
No problem.
Next is Shannon, followed by Mitzi.
My name is Shannon Pendergrass, and I'm here to say I support the changes to the racetrack regulations for the same reason as Andy has stated. I don't think it's fair that because my kids participate in the race events that we can't let them ride around on our private property where I have them safe instead of out on state property where there's lots of other traffic and people where they can get injured more likely. So I'd like to be able to keep my property rights and let my kids ride around my yard and still be able to race. So I'd like it to be changed to commercial so those of us that aren't profiting off of it and can be able to do it and give our kids a positive thing to compete in. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mitzi, followed by Dane Ferguson.
My name is Mitzi Van Aslen. I oppose amending the borough racetrack ordinance at this time. The proposed changes in no way enhance the ordinance and may even confuse certain individuals and or organizations. I'm told a person or persons who asked for the changes have not made the distinction between commercial and private property or between permanent and temporary race venues in their minds. The traditional, previously established races, such as the Iron Dog and community races at winter carnivals, are exempt as they are not operated at specific venues for long periods of time during the year and create a nominal inconvenience. When the racetrack ordinance became borough-wide in 2006, the requirements to obtain and keep a conditional use permit were established. It says in part that racetracks may not generate traffic, light, glare, noise, odor, smoke, etc., that causes a nuisance off the permitted site. As part of the promises made by the owners of the Alaska Raceway Park in 2006, regards noise abatement, among others, they said they would, within 7 years, reduce the noise levels endured by persons off the permitted site. To this point, nothing has been done that I can am able to discern. Before we amend this fairly straightforward ordinance, we should try to enforce the provisions that are presently within it. Are there any questions?
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Dane, followed by Sarah Rodriguez.
I'm Dane Ferguson. Thank you, Assembly and Mayor, for having us here and letting us speak. I want to tell you a little bit about myself. But first, I want to say I support the amendment for the racetrack issue we got going. I grew up in Anchorage, grew up playing hockey. Every year, we built an outdoor ice rink in my backyard. At age 20, I quit playing hockey. I got into motorsports. I started riding on all my friends' property here and there. I don't know when fun became practice, but at some point, I ended up getting lucky enough to win an X Games gold medal. There's not a whole lot of competitions, only one a year. That would be really unfortunate if I wasn't able to ride on somebody's property or if I could only ride six times at this guy's house and six times at that guy's house. Eventually, I bought property in Wasilla for the sole purpose of being able to ride. My neighbor's here today. He grew up watching me from 7 years old, and I think he's had nothing but positive experience from being a neighbor of mine and what we do primarily. In Anchorage, a lot of rules were written, and I'd like to say I'm the president of the Alaska State Snowcross Lions Club, a nonprofit race organization. In Anchorage, we're fighting really hard just to be able to come up with a place to practice. And I don't know what happened because I wasn't really that old back then, but it seems to me like a lot of rules were made, not enforced, and then one day they said, that's it, you guys are out of here. I think it's very important that we look at the way everything's written, make sure there's nothing tricky in the writing, and make sure that just because my kid's riding after school and playing around just like I did on an ice rink, or just because as a president of a club, if somebody has to choose between signing up for our club and being a racer and maybe practicing or just being a recreational rider, they're not going to join our clubs. And again, I don't know where I went from just having fun to practicing and all that stuff. But again, I just think that as we take away riding rights, it's just not going to be good. I got to set many records. I got to see the world and a lot of things that, unfortunately, being this tall and this skinny, hockey wasn't taking me there. It's like being a skinny little horse jockey. And because also, I know a lot of the people aren't good public speakers like myself. I would just like to ask the room for a show of hands of those who are all in support of Andy's amendment here. And I would like to ask for a show of hands of those who are opposed to it. I think that that percentage speaks for itself. Many people in the community don't even know about this law. If we had better public relations, we could let more racers and more enthusiasts know about it, I think you would see that same percentage on a larger scale, and people would not even be able to stand in this building if we properly informed everybody about the way the rules are written. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sarah, followed by Helen Minoz.
Good evening. My name is Sarah Rodriguez, and I've lived in the Valley for over 20 years. It's my home, the place I work, and the place that I raise my three children. I have deep roots here, and I care about our community very much. I'm here tonight to speak to you about the issue of public safety in our borough. You see, I'm also married to a first responder who has served the borough for the past 13 years. As a borough, we have long outgrown our current level of emergency services. Our level of support for emergency services and their personnel lags behind other major areas in Alaska, including Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kenai, and Juneau. As you can see by the table in the letter that I've given you, we are dramatically behind in wages and staffing. Please don't misunderstand this. Our department itself is phenomenal. They have continually changed and grown within themselves to meet the needs of the community. Unfortunately, this has meant a greater strain on responders. It's become very difficult to keep qualified responders due to lack of pay and benefits. Most receive their training and either move to paid departments or realize that they have to put their families and jobs first and stop responding. In our borough, being an emergency responder means working two or more jobs in order to make a living wage. My husband misses special events and family time in order to protect our community. Over the years, I have viewed this as my public service. But as time passes and the borough continues to ignore the needs of these responders and our emergency services in general, I feel that it's time to speak up. Unfortunately, lives are also being put at risk. Due to working multiple jobs, many responders have limited times that they can respond. 911 calls are repaged multiple times in order to get sufficient personnel. Now, with a 30-hour week limit, the number of responders available is even less. Even within the borough, salaries for emergency responders are low. A lifeguard at a borough pool starts at $17.99 an hour, while an emergency responder starts at $11 an hour. It's time to make dramatic changes. We need to think outside the box, look at the priorities, and ask some hard questions. When having conversations with people in the Valley, most are shocked to find out that our firefighters and EMTs are not full-time, and even more shocked to find out that they are paid such low wages. They assume that their government is taking care of their safety by the taxes they are paying. Many are angry to find out that this is not happening. I know that money is tight, but I believe that the public would be behind dramatic changes that would increase public safety. The fact is that these men and women are our local heroes, and they are the heart and soul of our community. They are the ones that will be there for you in your greatest time of need. Recent actions by the borough have told them that they are not important, and that their family's sacrifices are not valued. Please don't ignore this problem any longer. Have the courage to do what our borough has needed to do for a long time and move forward in providing the quality of public safety that the residents of the borough deserve. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Sarah. Helen, followed by Tim Walters.
Good evening. My name is Helen Minoz, Mr. Moosey, Mr. Arvin, the Assembly. The item I'm talking on, I'm going to spend 3 minutes telling you, it was pulled from the agenda. Isn't that different? I'm not going to talk about a regional sewer system. I worked for 10 years to get personal finance through, and I did it by myself. Even as a board member at the Mat Valley Credit Union, nobody listened to me. It went above my head, and that's because I'm short. So I took it to the school board when Dr. Burnley was here, and I introduced myself at the chamber as somebody that was still on the board in 2012. He said, I already heard about you. That's because I've been talking about personal finance for so long. These kids that are sitting in this audience are not going to have pensions and benefits if this country is to survive. And we're the young kids on the block. We're not even 400 years old yet. I've lived one-third of the length of time we're a nation, almost. So I hope this comes up not postponed indefinitely, because believe it or not, unless up there or down there is ready for me, you're going to see me here on either a hospice house or a regional sewer system or making sure not adjusting the Constitution. It was in the separation of church and state, was very well versed in our original Constitution. Don't we have enough problems with trying to adjust that now, too? And money is getting tight. And when I have to take my time for 10 years to get something through, that everybody, it should be taught at home. But somebody missed the boat a couple generations back in more ways than one in this country. And we've got a lot of repair work to do. And I ain't moving anywhere, so you're stuck with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Tim, followed by Maja Fritz.
Good evening. My name is Tim Walters. I am a teacher here in the Valley and a resident also. And I'm here to speak in for the emergency responders. One of the really important things for me are my students. I think about them a lot. And we have lots of great conversations. And one of the things that'll come up in class is one of the great things about America is that we take care of our people. Hey, if a boat goes down, you know what? Coast Guard's going to come out looking for you. I mean, if everything really goes bad. If there's an auto accident, everybody's coming to the scene all at once. Americans take care of Americans. And right now, we're getting to the point with our emergency responders where they're being cut thin. And I worry about my students getting in an accident and somebody not making it there on time. I worry about their safety. A few extra minutes, 30 seconds. I've heard people talk about 30-minute response times. Sarah just mentioned people. 911 calls going out 2 and 3 times before somebody responds to it. Guys, that can't happen. It can't happen here in the borough. I mean, I worry about myself. I worry about my wife. But I really worry about my students. And that's just not acceptable. So please, I'm a property owner. I'm a taxpayer. Add something to my taxes, my property taxes. $50, $100, whatever it'll take to fix it. Please do. I think everyone would agree. This is something that we're willing to pay for in hopes that we never, ever have to have these people respond in our moment of need. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Maja, followed by Timothy. And I know there's a lot of emotion in the room, but if you clap at every interval, we're going to be here another 45 minutes. So if you could try to refrain, would be greatly appreciated. Please state your name for the record, because I think I butchered it.
That's all right. It's Maja Fritz. Hi. I'm a mother and a teacher, and I just want to say that I support 100% the regulation changes for the racetrack. I wholeheartedly support Dane and his commitment to these kids and giving them the opportunity to pursue something that they love, their interests, and keep them out of trouble. With the X Games, with the Olympics, it's fantastic that it's sparking interest. I'm also a board member with Big Lake Aurora Racing Lions, and we had over 30 kids a couple weekends ago, and the interest is growing and growing and growing, so please give these kids the opportunity to pursue their interest and be active and healthy and safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Mia. Timothy Beckner, followed by Randall Robinson.
Hello, my name is Timothy Beckner. I support the racetrack and everything that goes with it. This is all I do. All I do is ride, and I live in Anchorage, and for us to ride, we have to come to the Valley to ride, and most of the time it is at a friend's house. So to take that away would be taking away my lifestyle and all their lifestyles. So thank you for your time, and thank the mayor.
Thank you for your testimony, Timothy. Randall Robinson, followed by Brian Christie.
Hi, my name is Randall Robinson, and I support the racetrack changes. And I'd like to thank the mayor and all the assemblymen today, and I hope by the time I'm old enough to have kids, or they can ride out in their houses and enjoy their properties as well. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Randall. Brian, followed by Jed Walker.
Hi, my name is Brian Christie. Thanks for having us here, and thank you, Mayor. I'm a homeowner and a property owner in Wasilla, and my daughter just started racing this year with all the group that you're hearing from here today. It's very important that this doesn't go through because we all have private property, and I think you would feel the same way if you were doing something that you thought other people shouldn't have any influence or direction on. I have a public trail track. I play with UTVs on my own property, and if I have to abide by an 8-foot fence and cover my 5 acres and do everything that's said on this stuff, I don't know how I can do it. It doesn't make sense. And I just support the amendment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brian. Jed, followed by Connor Wiggins.
Hi, I'm Jed Walker. I'm here to support the racetrack amendments. I've lived at a track for the last 4 years, and I've got a 2-year-old boy that's about ready to start racing, and it's hard enough to fund racing as it is, let alone a track and all the things that come with it. So I definitely support some sort of amendment to make it a little easier on us racers and future racers to be able to continue doing what we do. So I'd like to thank the mayor and the assembly members for your time. Have a good night.
Thank you for your testimony. Connor, followed by Gregory Nelson.
Hello, my name is Connor Wiggers, and thanks for having us. I support the amendment just because I've been watching Dane ever since I was 7, and it's inspirational to the sport, and just makes me want to ride. Thanks.
Thank you, Connor, for your testimony. Gregory, followed by Jessica Anderson.
Good evening. My name is Gregory Nilsson. I'm a resident of Butte. I'm well within earshot of the racetrack. I appreciate the comments these folks have made this evening about feeling that they were being deprived of the opportunity to race in numbers on their own property. Bearing in mind that this is a racetrack ordinance, not a racing ordinance, the concerns are misplaced. Nowhere in the ordinance for racetracks does it say that you cannot, as a property owner, set up a track that covers your whole 40 acres if you want to, and bring all the neighborhood kids, bring all the BMX racers from Anchorage, and have your own little racetrack. That's not a commercial racetrack. That is not being prohibited by the current racetrack organization rules. What they need to do in order to refine this is the one thing that Andy said, put the word commercial in there. That will resolve a lot of the confusion that I've heard coming from a lot of directions from both sides of this issue. Excuse me. Of course, people have a right to use their property as they see fit, as long as it doesn't impinge on their neighbors. In my view, everyone has a right to the peaceful enjoyment of their own property. Between you and your neighbor, if you're creating a disturbance, that is something that you guys need to resolve. The racetrack ordinance does not cover that issue. What I see here in this proposed amendment has a lot of really good stuff in it, quite frankly, in terms of gauging noise, metering, and the quality of metering device. But the devil's in the details, because the racetrack is an important part of the motorsports community in this valley. We recognize that there are a lot of people who are going to defend it come hell or high water, and will not accept that it does come with a backside. And that is the noise, the vibration, and the aggravation it causes to us. The detail to which I take great exception that's been advanced here this evening is an extension of both the duration and decibel level allowed during sanctioned racing events under the racetrack ordinance. If this goes through, the racetrack can make more noise than they already are. And now, under these circumstances, under the decibel levels they are presently required to operate below, they are still driving us nuts. I would say take this amendment apart. Eliminate most everything except for the commercial aspect. Nothing in the current regulation precludes these folks from doing what they're worried about losing the right to do. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Gregory. Jessica Anderson, followed by Diane Woodruff.
Hi, my name is Jessica Anderson. First off, I'd like to introduce you guys to the state of Alaska's youngest motocross racer, Chase Anderson. He started racing at 3 years old. We hope one day that he can be just as successful as Dane Ferguson and a gentleman by the name of Travis Pastrana. I am in full support of changing the regulations as indicated by Andy Anderson and everybody else that is approved to it. We hope that we can give him just as much opportunity to advance his skills like he has now when he gets older so he can have a career doing something that he loves. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony, Jessica. Diane Woodruff, followed by Russell Joyce.
Mayor, can we say we knew him when?
My name is Diane Woodruff, and I came to speak on a couple of things which have been pulled from the consent agenda this evening. The first is Resolution 14020, which is in support of putting funding into the PERS fund. And I guess what I'd really like to suggest is instead of addressing it as a particular individual's proposal, maybe consider rewording to support the upfront contribution, but also to make it clear that the Assembly does not support any increases in the percentage of funding that the municipalities are expected to kick in. There have been a number of discussions over the last year where a couple of communities have suggested that they would be willing to kick in more than the 22% they already do, which is a little bit frightening. And the other is that there have been some proposals where the upfront funding came with a reduction of the state's percentage. Right now, I think the Armed Board's rate somewhere in the neighborhood of 39.5%. The municipalities pay 22% and the state picks up the remaining 17.5%. So I think it would be prudent to just be very, very careful to make it clear that you do not support any change in the cap rate. Not only would it be very difficult on communities of this size, but in the smaller communities like the ones that I've been serving, Yucatan, St. Paul, it would be absolutely devastating. And I think it's something to be guarded against as we go forward. The two primers on that particular piece of legislation are Armed Board Resolution 2011-23, which talks about level dollar methodology, which they also recommend and which I also see is not in this particular resolution, and their resolution 2012-02. So if you'd like to follow up with that, if you haven't already seen those, that might be a good place to start. The other thing I wanted to talk to you tonight is that I just wanted to say I'm glad that resolution 14-017 was pulled from the consent agenda. An issue as controversial as school funding, I think, really should not have been placed there to start with. And anything that has to do with the one pot of money that is in Juneau and how it's divided really deserves a full discussion and a full opportunity for the public to be heard before a resolution is taken up on that. The school board, as I understand, has not even weighed in on this issue. I think they're probably divided as much as the public is about where money should go. And personally, I find it a little scary, knowing that there's one pot of money and that the biggest portion of the Mat-Su borough budget goes to the school district. Any discussion that doesn't talk about what the ramifications of that are going to be to us as property tax owners or payers is a little spooky to me. So, thanks.
Thanks for your testimony, Diane. Russell Joyce, and that concludes the sign-up list. If there's anybody else that wants to speak, please come up and plant yourself in the first row. How are those canoes treating you?
Well, nice to see you all again. It's been about a year, and kind of took some time to come back. I am Russell Joyce. I came before the Assembly about a year ago and put something forth that actually happened, and we're here to thank you very much for the way things turned out. So we did take possession of the canoes. We did the trip that we had intended to do. We took 19 Boy Scouts down the Yukon River, and everything that we had with the trailer and canoes worked flawlessly, and we had a fantastic event. The other users of those canoes that had previously used them from the borough, Palmer Hayflats folks, got to use the canoes just as they have every year. The river cleanup for the Susitna Rotary Club used the canoes just as they have every other year. They're on slate to use it again this year, both parties. So I think the canoes are being much better utilized than they've ever been utilized. And we sure appreciate your help in doing that and want to let you know they're in good hands. The boys put something together. I'd like to give each of you who were part of that one, including your office, Lonnie. You guys do good stuff, and I'd like to make sure you keep it up. I think we can all work together and make good things happen, and I sure appreciate your help, Mr. Arvin. Yeah. Got a couple of boys here who were on one was on the trip, and others working on their merit badges and attending a meeting, so thank you.
Thank you, Russell. Let's see, how about you? Please state your name for the record. I don't have your names in front of me. So.
Sorry, my name is Peter Camilos. And I'm here to speak on behalf of public safety and fully support, fully funding public safety officers and first responders. A year ago, on December 11th, my wife and I were driving in. I'm a teacher here in the Valley, and a year ago my wife and I were driving into school to go watch a hockey game that some of my students were going to be performing at. On our way, my wife and I were hit at full speed in a head-on collision on Kinnickus Bay. I cannot tell you what a relief it was to have. I don't remember much from that wreck. I remember that I don't even know what he looks like. I remember that his name was Richard. He was the ambulance driver that took my wife and me into the hospital. I still have traumatic brain injury issues from that wreck. My wife broke her back. She broke four ribs. We had to reconstruct her wrist. And we shut down Kinnickus Bay for an hour and a half while they tried to find us in the wreckage. Waiting for as long as wait times can be, having to wait for multiple calls to go into 911, it's not reasonable. So we are. It's a form of insurance to fund this, and it's certainly after a crash course in insurance and how it works in the medical field. This is an insurance that makes a lot more sense to me to have the responders fully paid, fully there, have quality responders. The responders that we have, I wish to thank them. And again, I want to support. I'm here on behalf of my wife. She couldn't be here tonight. She's at home with our two teenage boys and getting ready for the rest of the school week. But again, we do want to make sure that you hear very loud and clear. We're property owners here in the Valley, have been for 10 years, and intend to continue to be property owners for many, many years to come. If we need to pay insurance in the form of additional funding there, you have my full support and blessing. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Bakarian, you want to step up? Please state your full name for the record.
My name is Garvin Bucaria. Got a great sound system here, but I have to say that I'm not impressed with the public podium here. And I understand it was not your doing. I don't know the details on it, but I know this, that it's similar to my experience at the school board meeting, wherein the school board members were sitting multiple feet above the public. And I can only say that there was a little woman, I bet she was not more than 4.5 feet tall, and you have to admit, And please come down here when no one's here and look from this standpoint, that this assembly room is not set up for the public to have an eye-to-eye contact in the same vein that they do over at the Wasilla City Council offices. And I can recommend a couple of things. I was going to bring a ladder to emphasize my point so that I could be at eyeball level. But Ms. McKechnie was a little upset and suggested that I not do that. She didn't say I couldn't. I would suggest that maybe this came from a design from the Anchorage Assembly. And if you have seen the Anchorage Assembly, you'll note that the audience sits on an incline so that the people at the back of the room can have more or less eye-to-eye contact. Now, I can make some suggestions. You could spend a lot of money on this to try and upgrade this, but then you might incur a hazard for people of my vintage and older who might fall off of a step or something. You could install a hydraulic system with a safety cage for us seniors. However, that might be a problem. A more simple solution might be, and there is a problem here because I see your electrical outlets, you don't have an electrical outlet in the back of the room. But if this podium were placed at approximately this level, it would tend to maybe equate the level of, how shall I say, status that we, the public, have relative to you, the elected representative. So I suggest we not spend a lot of money because I'm as a skinflint a person as there exists, perhaps. And so I'm advocating an economic solution that doesn't incur a liability upon the borough. The other point I wanted to make was I appreciated the presentation regarding the port. I support the port. But I don't support a concept that it's not interfering with recreation. Well, it may not be interfering with recreation because the port pretty much usurped a good deal of the public borough land that was not limited by laws and regulations and constraints.
Please
now, you've got, there was a statement about the number of square miles of the port. I'd like to reiterate that a good percentage of that square mileage is muskeg, and it represents watershed, which is very, very important because the water is the key to everything that works in this borough.
Mr. Bucari, you need to wrap it up, please.
Yes, sir. I would also like to make one point. Most lakes in this state are publicly owned. Lake Lorain is a jewel among lakes in this valley. And I would hope that this borough respects and protects the watershed for Lake Lorain, no matter what happens with the development of the rail, the port, Kabata, God help me, or any other developments you have planned. And I also might say I submitted a recommendation.
Mr. Bricarian, you need to wrap it up. You need to wrap it up.
To Mr. Perkins, that we protect the rail siding in the ag area adjacent to Holstein Avenue from water contamination. And I suggested we treat it with bentonite to protect that watershed that drains to the Little Sioux.
Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Lackey.
Deputy Mayor, Mr. Arvin, and Borough Assembly, I am speaking here in behalf of the Borough Ordinance on the racetracks. I'm Alaska Raceway Park. Earl Lackey is my name. We have a race ordinance, a racetrack ordinance, number 1763, that was put together in haste to control the noise of a racetrack in the core area of the borough. On the 21st of November 2006, with no idea what the consequences would be, the vote was made to make this ordinance borough-wide. The Mat-Su Borough is an enormous place, and with many diverse types of recreation here in the borough. One size fits all just flat doesn't work. We must move this ordinance back to the core area and put together one that makes sense for the various activities that you've heard of tonight in the outlying areas of this borough, not in the core area itself. We also have Chapter 8.52 that already addresses noise and amplified sound. Let's put our heads together and encourage development of all sports in the borough, not just the few that make noise here at your meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lackey. Sir?
Deputy Mayor, Assembly Members, I'm Daniel Carter. I've been in a responder with the Mat-Su Borough for well over 6 years. And as I spoke a few Assembly meetings back, the Department of Emergency Services is still on the verge of a catastrophic failure. I'm here to urge you to move ahead as quickly as possible with funding for full-time positions. I'm concerned about our community. We are continuing to have repeated pager calls. For those of you that do not know what that is, we are not full-time. We carry a pager with us. So when we are at home, a call comes out over our pager, we respond to the station. Due to the hour cap, due to the lack of personnel available because of the reach their maximum hours, people are not being able to respond. They hear the call, they're not able to go. Not only that, it also, no full-time people, lack of full-time people, results in an excessive response time. So if you think about it, 10 minutes from the call time the call comes out of our pagers, we have to drive down to the station. So there's 10 minutes. Then another 10 minutes to drive in the fire truck back to, or the ambulance, to the call, that's over 20 minutes. Which for somebody sitting, as we had the one gentleman that was in their car wreck, for someone sitting in a car wreck, that is too long. Or if you're standing in your yard watching your house burn, that is too long. We also have, it's a basic premise, it's a basic desire of all of most firefighters. It's trained in us from the time we start, go through our training, to help in our community, not only in emergency response, but also to help train and teach children in safe practices. I just recently was approached asking to go into our local school to do a reading program and a safety program for the children in our local school. I had to turn it down. The reason is there was no time. I did not have the time able to go do that with my other jobs, having to support my wife and my family. The time just was not available to do that. And I know of many other people that are the same situation. So for the sake of our community, for the sake of safety for our community, I urge you to move ahead as rapidly as possible to come up with funding for full-time positions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Miss?
Yes, hello. My name is Heather Carter. I'm a wife of an emergency responder, Daniel. I'm also on the auxiliary, and I carry a pager, and I hear the calls. And I'm concerned for the community because I've got a little boy, and what if he starts to choke, and the ambulance won't come. Nobody will be there for him. And I'm just really worried about the car wrecks. I mean, I heard a call the other day, and somebody was stuck in a car. They had no ambulances. They got somebody from Palmer. The guy was sitting there, I don't know how long, stuck in the car. They're just too busy. We need more people. We need full-time positions. We need you guys to back us so that we can back you.
Because we're supposed to be heroes. Everybody considers fire department and emergency responders as heroes, but we aren't heroes if we aren't there. And so we need your guys' help to help us take a stand for our community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
All right. Thank you very much, Assembly members. My name is Elena Anderson. I'm the dispatch supervisor at Palmer Police Department. We handle all the 911s for the Matsuguro, all the fire and EMS for the responders, and we do those pages, so I appreciate all of the responders, and when they are not out of time, when they can go. I wanted to reassure you as the board, the services that our agency provides. I have a letter from the medical director of the Matsuguro, Roger Swingle. He's the medical director for the Matsuguro EMS. So everybody here can understand when they call 911 what is happening. To whom it may concern, I'm writing in strong support of the application for Palmer Police Department's bid to continue providing dispatch services for the Matsuguro Emergency Services. I've been the EMS medical director for the Matsuguro and the medical advisor for the Matsuguro EMS Advisory Board since circa 1995. I know firsthand that Palmer Police Dispatch has provided excellent quality dispatch performance for our EMS. Their system is highly advanced, and their dispatchers have proven to be highly skilled, well-trained, and motivated to provide the best dispatch services possible. I've reviewed many of the calls they have received. I know the instructions they are providing to the citizens within the Matsuguro are excellent and state-of-the-art. Their skilled performance has allowed our EMS to optimize the care the patients receive. They are ceaselessly striving to perfect their performance through quality review and up-to-date so that our borough receives the best dispatch services available. They have assisted the EMS with projects such as the dispatcher-assisted bystander CPR program, resulting in a dramatic increase in the cardiopulmonary arrest survival that the Matsuguro EMS responds to. Because of the dispatcher's contributions, hard work, and skill, our statistics for survival for cardiopulmonary arrest within the Matsuguro far exceeds the survival rates of most communities. During this project, they were easy to work with, full of ideas, experience, training, and insights that helped perfect this initiative. They were highly motivated to improve patient care and assist with EMS with improving the care delivered to our citizens. Their hard work is followed with rigorous quality reviews to optimize our availability to continue perfecting this initiative. They have gone far beyond what is required, holding themselves to a higher standard. Many who have not worked closely with dispatch may be unaware of how fortunate the Matsuguro is to currently have emergency dispatch in the hands of such highly qualified and dedicated individuals. I am, however, very aware of their important and excellent contributions and wish to share this insight with you. It would be a tragedy to lose the high level of expertise that they have gained given to the Matsuguro. It would be a great setback to lose their experience gained from the many years of diligent efforts. I think it would be unlikely for a second group to match their dedication and knowledge base. I fear losing them would subject the Matsuguro to dispatchers whose experience levels would be below that what we have come to know. Thank you very much for your time, and I just wanted to reassure the Assembly that 911 services, top-notch, and the quality of service that we provide is reflected in this wonderful letter that he wrote on our behalf. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else that would like to come and speak? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
I'm John Venduska. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk. I'm on a little different subject. You're going to be getting an introduction for a non-contiguous gas LID in my area that I live in. And I'm giving you a little pre-plug that I think it'd be a very good thing to pass that. It's the first time ever attempted in the Mat Valley, a non-contiguous gas LID. The current system is contiguous gas LIDs that are just really unfair. And in our area, we have tried to get, not me, I'm against forcing people to get gas that don't want it, but a lot of people in our area wanted it, and it's been tried over the last 10 years for four times and have failed under the current system. And I believe, talking to people that are for gas in the area, that it's unanimously in our era that the people that want gas are supporting this and are very happy with it, and the people that don't want gas are very happy with it. So whenever you can get 100% of the population for something, I think it'd be a very good thing to pass through the borough assembly. That way they could get their gas and leave the people that don't want it alone. And I think it should be a model for the whole. When you see this, I think it's going to be a success. I hope it is, as long as you guys approve it. It should be the model for the whole, for all LIDs. No more contiguous gas LIDs. It should go to this non-contiguous, and people will get their gas, and the gas expansion will expand through the valley faster, in my opinion. And stop the contention. It just pits neighbor against neighbor the way it is now. And I think with this, if this succeeds, this is the solution to the gas, other than the borough getting out of the gas business, which I think would be fine too. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I look forward to that coming up at a future meeting, because it would be the first time where 100% was in agreement on anything that I've ever seen. Thank you very much. Ma'am?
Thank you, Mayor and Assemblyman, for allowing me to speak tonight. My name is Catherine Bacon. And Matthew, I spoke to you both today. I also want to thank you for taking the time and the risk to introduce this first ever non-contiguous LID. This evening, I am hoping this will allow for future LIDs to move forward more quickly with much less pitting of neighbor against neighbor and to be more accepted by all. I have spoke to all the people, all the 19 parcels that are on the non-contiguous LID, and everyone has told me that they are on board with it. And like John said, the people who don't want it don't have to get it, and they're happy also. I also wanted to thank John Bandeska for bringing the non-contiguous LIDs to our attention. We, the people who oppose getting, for the people who oppose getting the natural gas, and those who want to get the natural gas, are in agreement for the first time on this LID. I am looking forward to seeing this through. I am paying $1,000 per month in propane fuel gas in a house I'm not living in. I have another house that does have natural gas, and my bill is $140. So I really need the natural gas up on Lazy Mountain. So hopefully this will go through. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any additional speakers from the audience? Seeing none, we'll take a 5-minute break and come back 16 after. Thank you. Madam Clerk, will you please remind the body where we are on the agenda?
We are back to page 2, bottom of page 2, veto. And I'll read it into the record. So ordinance serial number 13144, an ordinance amending MSB 17.63, racetrack regulations, and it's on the motion to postpone indefinitely.
So I heard desire when we had this in front of us before and yet again tonight that there are some on the assembly that would like a staff report. Mr. Manager?
Oh, good. That was easy. Do you want to take up the question of the override, or do you want to staff first for responding with override first?
So the question is there a motion to override?
I make a motion to override the mayor, or override the mayor's veto.
Is there objection? Yeah, there is objection. Please vote.
Can I explain it real quick, just real
yes.
quick? If you agree with the mayor's veto, you would vote no to override. If you want to override it and have the postpone indefinitely, you would vote yes. So if you agree with the mayor's veto, you vote no. If you want the postponement indefinitely to stand, you'd vote yes. It takes 5 votes to override the mayor's veto.
So to sum it up, if you want to debate this and vote on this, you need to vote no. Just to
Correct.
Be clear.
Correct.
Okay.
Mayor, or Mr. Deputy Mayor, give me a second to get this written down. The override has failed. Let me say this into the record as I write it. With Assemblymember Culver, Sykes, and Halter in favor, and Assemblymembers Salmon, Culligan, Beck, and Arvin opposed. And where it is right now, Mr. Deputy Mayor, is on the floor. The main motion was already moved, so the postpone indefinitely is no longer there, so basically the Assembly can move to amend it, they can move to adopt it, they can move to fail it. So the main motion is already on the floor. We've got Assemblymember Sykes and Salmon.
Mr. Salmon.
At this point, I would request the staff's report.
Please come forward. Thank you.
Deputy Mayor, Assembly members, Alex and I are going to kind of tag team here on our staff report because this is actually a combination between our two divisions within planning. I helped to author the legislation in front of you. About 9 months ago, we were approached by a group of citizens, mainly in the Big Lake area, interested in racing snow machines on lakes and other motorized vehicles. There was questions to whether their type of racing fell under the race ordinance or if there were other pieces of code. At that time, as Alex and I interpreted the code, they should not, but their main concerns were that they wanted code to be very clear that these types of races should not be regulated under borough code and wanted the ordinance to be very clear about those types of activities. And these are particularly races being done by nonprofit groups like the Lions Club out in Big Lake and other nonprofit race groups. At that time, that group approached their assembly member in that district, Assemblymember Salmon, who then put in a work order with staff to work with that group to come up with amendments based on the concerns of that group. We then put those together. Those were brought forward to the Assembly. The Assembly saw those and gave a 90-day review period and sent that down to the Planning Commission to look at these and discuss these, put them through public hearing, those types of things. At that point, the Planning Commission reviewed the document. Probably about the time that Assemblymember Salmon had brought the issue to the Assembly's attention to review, we started working with Andy Anderson. He also had an interest in racetracks and the racetrack regulations. His in particular was not necessarily related to motorized uses and the snow machines on lakes, but really of a nonprofit component to racing on his property. When we looked at the ordinance, we saw that the language in there related to for-profit or nonprofit could apply to the situation that Mr. Anderson had. As we went forward in the process, discussed this with Planning Commission, they made some recommendations, passed their resolution. Their recommendations are in a memo that you received. As we've been working more and hearing more from the racing community, particularly motocross, from my opinion, in the Planning Department, it seems like we kind of have a second issue that's arisen to the table. There are kind of two issues here now. We have the issues related to Big Lake and the amendments that are in front of you. And as we start to hear more from the motocross community, we seem to be having an issue related to that style of racing and maybe the regulations that we have not necessarily being relevant to that style of racing. So, you know, I'm going to let Alex get into some of the technical components on how we enforce this and how we're interpreting some of this. But I think it would be interesting if we had some discussion on motocross and how we want 1763 to specifically apply to that style of racing if the Assembly is interested in that. So,
I think it'd be beneficial to go ahead and thrash through this, Alex, and come up and add some additional clarification.
Question for Mr. Kruger, please.
Mr. Culver?
Yes. So a citizen or somebody from the racing community, Big Lake, approached the department, asked them if they're violating the noise ordinance by having these weekend fundraisers or whatever. And what was the response? No, it's not, but they want it in code anyway?
Well, I don't think noise ordinance was exactly what we were asked about. There's noise components within the racetrack regulations. But, it really kind of came down to whether these are permanent tracks, because they're on the lake all the time, but, you know, there aren't permanent facilities there. And I can let kind of Alex get into this. We've been kind of discussing this in back. But what we had said was, at this time, our staff was not interpreting these races as needing a permit, but the individuals or those groups in that race community felt that an interpretation wasn't enough, that clarity of code was very important to them, and that they wanted these things clearly outlined in code, that these races were not to be done like that because of concerns related that interpretation 10 years from now may change.
Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Mr. Sykes.
Yes, when Alex comes up, I would ask that he address this. Under the current code, 1763.015, subsection H, it says, races which are not conducted on a permanent facility are exempt from the provisions of this chapter. And we have an attorney here, and Alex is here, and I want to know if that is clear enough, because it's pretty clear to me.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, members of the Assembly, Alex Strawn, Development Services Manager. I spend a lot of time interpreting code. It's not always entirely clear, and I can tell you that in the past stretch of time here, I've spent a lot of time looking at this particular section of code and chasing definitions and looking at every definition of every word and every sentence. So I have a pretty good understanding of what I think the intent was and how it should be applied, and it conforms with the way we have been applying it in the past. As far as the races on Big Lake in that area, my understanding is that they do not have permanent infrastructure in place and therefore would be exempt under that section of code. Back a year or two ago when we were approached by those groups, I did offer to write a memo to that effect to say, based on, and you know, I wanted a little bit of information whether they had any permanent facilities, but it sounded like they didn't. I would have offered a memo saying that they were not, that these regulations did not apply. I'd like to just touch on a couple of other things. There's a lot of concern that people aren't going to be able to ride their dirt bikes in their backyard on trails that they've built on their property. And my interpretation of code, and I can certainly put this down on paper as an adopted or, you know, bona fide policy of the planning department, but as long as races are not being held on that private property, then you could practice all day long every day if you wanted to. That's a big part of that is because of the word contestant within the definition of racetrack. You have to sort of chase it down to the Webster's definition of what a contestant is, but basically it is a person who takes part in a contest or competition. So if there's no races, contests, competitions on that property, then I don't think that's seven. The rule that says you can only practice seven times on your property, I do not believe that applies. So I think that could eliminate a lot of the concerns that people have. And I can certainly put that down on a piece of paper with an official signature on it to put people's mind at ease. And the only way that could be overturned would be through the courts.
Alex?
Yes?
Why can't we put that in code?
Yeah, so we could rewrite. So if you go back to 1763.015 F and G, it says that basically you can't have more than three races on your property at any given year, and you can't practice more than seven times. And you certainly could throw in some clarification in there what that really means. I think this was added after the main regulations were adopted to close a loophole. There are race track facilities that were only holding three races a year, but they were practicing all the time, and they're super loud. And I think that they put that in there as a fix. But certainly, if we wanted to do a follow-up amendment to clarify what is meant by that, we certainly could add, you know, a section of code in there that that clarifies. That's always ideal.
I just want to go back to Big Lake. This prior ordinance, this ordinance clearly doesn't apply to snow machines on a lake. That's true, isn't it? There was really no need for any change based on the Big Lake circumstance.
If there's no permanent infrastructure, it doesn't apply.
And so, and now with the bikers, really their only worry is commercial, whether or not they go to the level of commercial, right?
Right. So, I think there's some, in this ordinance, there are some good changes. A lot of it is truly cleanup. There's a lot of these things are being deleted, like the Planning Commission can set conditions, things like that. The Planning Commission can already do that on a conditional use permit. They can do that on any conditional use permit. Taking that out, I don't see any problem with that. Taking out a requirement for the racetrack.
But I want to go back to...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The bikers are, some of the young people come up to testify, they're coming out of Anchorage, they need a place to practice. That's not a problem under the current code.
As long as they're not practicing at a place that has races.
Well, you mean a race that's going on at that time?
Within
if that, they're just up practicing on somebody's 40 acres up in Sutton, that's not a violation of this code. Never has been, never will be.
Right.
Correct.
That's my interpretation.
That's all I wanted to...
Well, I'm sorry, but please, you gotta not shout from the audience. It's not in decorum. And the issue is, if you've mentioned now a couple things that you'd be willing to put to writing to clarify. With all the time that you've spent on the issue and the intimate knowledge that you have of this code, if you recognize that there would be benefit to reducing something to writing, then the greater population would probably benefit as well. So I'm on the verge of asking for... Let me turn it over to Mr. Culligan and then Mr. Salmon is in the queue.
Yeah, so my comments are you sure that recently we haven't had other code or other that's been interpreted differently or would... make this user group question the borough or planning or code enforcement in any way?
Can you restate the question?
Let me just tell you the road we've been down before and some of my distrust and some of the issues. I ran for the assembly because of a stupid thing of a noise ordinance that happened to do with model rockets, model airplanes, cars, etc. I spent $10,000 along with three other people that spent that much looking at suing the borough over a noise ordinance that they couldn't defend. And many of the people are testifying against this. You know, are we going to go through and add the smell of horses? I'm fully supportive of horses. How far are we going to go? But it's not clear. It's not clear to the average user. It's not clear to the users. And I would ask that we clarify that. And we spend millions and millions and millions, and I'm pointing to this gentleman here, at Nordic Ski Racing. I'm all for it. That's great. But the reality is, per dollar, supporting a different community that it doesn't show up at our meetings and protest sometimes about their property rights. I think it should be clarified, and it should be inclusive. And even it's a little bit hard to read, but on the other hand, if we need to make it possible tonight for certain things, I'm not sure if it needs to happen. But I would like to have it clarified so that those issues are addressed, and that it's clear that the borough's not going to be out at Big Lake with code compliance. Like the FAA at airports during the Iditarod, writing people up. They need to know what the parameters are, what they have as nonprofits to get insurance. It certainly made sense when it was explained to me about the 7 days of practice. I would like that clarified because it's not real easy reading and it's not real clear. But through my own experience, just drives me through the roof every time I hear it. This body has supported and historically ordinances, especially when it comes to sound, especially when it comes to things that burn fuel, that were totally nonsensical and emotional, rather than talking to the user group and setting some reasonable expectations. We also have coming forward, I think, some stuff about jet skis and other stuff. You know, I live on a water body and the lake, and there's some common sense things that happen, and by talking to the users rather than hundreds of thousands of dollars we spend kind of going around for one issue. If we could just clarify code, I would really, really appreciate it.
Mr. Salmon.
Well, I'm presuming, and I don't know Mr. Anderson, but that something must have been brought to his attention about what he was already doing on his land. And to, as Mr. Culligan says, clarify, even for my opinion, if Andy has five or six friends that have a habit of coming out every weekend and running their dirt bikes, then it would be facetious to suppose they weren't racing. It doesn't matter if it's commercial or not commercial. Boys and girls race. And when there's five or six of them together and they meet every weekend or three or four times a week, they're having races. So that's the part that, for me, that needs to be clarified. His 80 acres of land, his friends on his land, they ride their bikes, and so it's a paper tiger. How are you going to enforce such a thing? And if you do attempt to enforce such a thing, how are you going to prove that up in a court of law? What do? You cite them and charge them money or whatever? But I'm agreeing with Steve. That needs to be clarified for the benefit of the owner of that land. Exactly what does that mean? Because it's naive to presume that you're going to stop young men from racing their motocross bikes on a dirt track that's out in the middle of nowhere. So that's my point. The Planning Commission moved that thing forward unanimously. I think it's not right for us to pick it apart. I just presume that we would have taken the fact that they and the Planning Department have done their work and that we should pass this. And I was opposed to the postponement last time. I'm glad that the mayor's veto stood. And believe me, tonight when we make this vote, I will be very happy regardless of which way it goes, because we will have been identified as our standing on the belief in personal property rights. Thank you.
So I think what's fair to say is that the public reached out to you, and you guys, you gals, and and you gave a pretty hearty attempt at trying to add some clarity. I think it just needs a little bit more work to bring it to prime time. If there is, you know, when you define the word contestant, whether there's a trophy or a stipend at the end for whoever wins, at the end of the day, there is a contestant, whether it's a formal race or not. And I think it's in that context that the user group wants clarity, such that 10 years from now, somebody doesn't show up and say, well, just because you don't have a trophy doesn't mean you don't have contestants and you're not living within code. So with that, I'd be willing to work with you and maybe move to postpone this till meeting of April 1st, add some clarity, a few more words, and then I think it'll be ready for prime time. And then I would imagine that this body will take quite a different action than it took to postpone indefinitely at the last meeting. And if that's not, if there's no objection to that, that would be my motion. Mr. Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It's not that I have an objection, but I didn't get a chance to ask any questions about it, and I'd like to do that if it's okay with you. I felt that this was not only confusing and not well understood, but of the five whereases, two of them are boilerplate, three of them talk about snow machines, and the only thing in all of the minutes of the Planning Commission, which are right here, it just says, discussion ensued whether ordinance will apply to frozen lakes, and it doesn't. And so the things that I would also like to have added, I think that people's private property rights should be respected, and we can find a way to do that. At the same time, there's three terms that appear to be confusing: non-profit, for-profit, and non-commercial, and the way in which they're used. And I think that we need to, I just couldn't see the borough sitting down trying to decide somebody is for-profit or non-profit. And when it relates to noise, I don't think there's a difference between non-profit noise and for-profit noise. And so the other issue is I guess I understand that we do have some noise regulations, but it's one of these issues that you have the right to do what you want on your private property, but once something leaves the private property and starts to infringe on the rights of the neighbors, that's when you have needs for regulations. And so that's what I think needs to be addressed, and I think it can all be accommodated. So I'd like you to have that discussion, and I do not oppose the motion to postpone till time certain, but I also think that these things can be clarified.
I'd just like to have the borough attorney read that. Was it the definition of racetrack? Make sure everybody, because there's a couple, I think this young man, Mr. Anderson, would like to hear it too.
Borough Code 1763-005 defines racetrack means a prepared route traveled by contestants to achieve goals of skill, duration, or speed, including practice for such events, also known as raceway or race course.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, that definition, you got a kind of a contrary element towards the back end on a practice versus a real contest. If you get that out of there, you're going to go a long ways, and then the whole thing probably doesn't apply to these folks. And then, you're probably going to have to look at, what the definition of commercial is and sponsorships and things like that, if that takes you to that level for an event. I think they understand that, though.
So there's a motion on the Mr. Culver.
I would rather not tinker with these noise levels. I mean, this is... The heart of these issues as it pertains to surrounding property rights of others. Second most controversial issue ever to hit the borough is this racetrack issue. And so if you want to do a little tweak to allow the amateurs to keep doing what they're doing, I'd keep it real tight. But we're tweaking noise levels, and I'm not interested in going deep into the weeds with this thing.
I appreciate your comments. I don't think it's a big wholesale change that we're talking about. I think it's pretty insignificant language changes. There is a motion on the floor. There's a motion on the floor. Is there objection to postponement till April 1st, date certain? Hearing done. Yep. So I'll get a hold of you. Okay. Thanks. Madam Clerk, will you please read into the record the items that were not pulled from the consent agenda? Anybody else have any last wishes?
Resolution Sarah number 14018, a resolution approving the amended budgets for the 2012 Series D and 2014 Series A transportation system bond proceeds and the fiscal year 2013 designated legislative matching grant from the Alaska State Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, Fund 430. Resolution Serial Number 14019, a resolution approving a certain unincorporated communities and the incorporated nonprofit entity for participation in the fiscal year 2015 Community Revenue Sharing Program. Resolution Serial Number 14021, a resolution in support of Alaska Railroad Pilot Project for increased passenger services from the Manuska-Sitna Borough and expanding cooperation on transportation issues in Anchorage and the Manuska-Sitna Borough. Resolution Serial Number 14022, a resolution in support of all possible legislative measures to help restore salmon fisheries in the Manuska-Sitna Borough.
Mr. Solomon, will you move those, please?
Yes, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I move to adopt the consent agenda as read into the record by the clerk.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Objection? Hearing none, they carry. Madam Clerk.
Resolution Sierra number 14020, a resolution supporting Governor Parnell's proposal for an appropriation from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund with designated use in the state retirement systems and requesting strong support by the 28th Alaska Legislature.
Mr. Sykes, do you move that?
Yes, sir. Get the right page here. Yes. Resolution serial number 14020. I would like to move this resolution, and I'd like to speak to it.
Please proceed.
I would like to have the financial officer come forward and perhaps answer a couple of questions. We heard some testimony from Ms. Woodruff that suggested that we might have some additional liability if we didn't specifically say something about putting a cap on so that we wouldn't necessarily be liable for required extra contributions. And I would like to know what the effect of that is, because I had not considered this before I helped sponsor this. And so I would like to know what this could mean to us financially if we were required to make additional contributions.
Through the Deputy Mayor, to Assemblymember Sykes.
I'm sorry, Ms. Clayton. Mr. Salmon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I would just like an attorney's opinion on whether or not we're able to discuss this particular issue at this time, sir.
Through the Deputy Mayor to the Assembly, I think the issue that it's being raised is the local contribution to PERS, and so I really think it's pretty different than some of the issues that are being raised in litigation. So I don't see an issue. If it comes to that, then we could take that up. It seems to me what's being asked of Ms. Clayton is there any merit to amending this resolution to speak to wanting the local contribution to PERS from the borough not to go up from what it presently is? I think is what Assemblymember Sykes is really speaking to.
I'm good with that, sir. I just wanted an attorney's clearance before we move. Thank you.
Thanks, Tammy.
Okay. I believe what Ms. Woodruff was referring to, if they open the legislation, they could raise it higher than the amount that's there now. And that I know, I think John was even in on some of the discussions in Juneau, why they were concerned with that bill. So that would be additional money expense to the borough. I don't know exactly how much, because I don't know how much they raised it up to.
Mr. Manager?
Yeah, essentially, number one, this is a resolution crafted by AML, encouraging all boroughs and cities to sign on. Essentially, they are about $10 billion in a hole, and the state contribution keeps getting ratcheted up and up. The plan is to stick $3 billion in, level off the state payments, and keep the current percentage, increase that going future, and not raise that. That is part of the parameters in the study for that. Right now, the state contributes the same percentage for the state employees as we do for municipal employees. Not sure if that's just practice or there is some type of regulation to do so, but stuffing this money in is to keep that the cities and boroughs contribution at that 22.5% level. That is the plan. Now, there's nothing to say that this thing, through negotiations, does not get changed. But this is specifically being supported and run through in support of the governor with the Municipal League. And usually the Municipal League and the governor don't agree on much, but this is one item they do. Is there a risk? Yes. But as far as the plan going forward, as discussions were this weekend, it's to keep our current level so we can, cities and boroughs can budget for those consistent numbers going forward.
Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Mr. Colligan.
So I think we heard pretty clearly earlier, number one, there's concerns about what that number's going to be, and we took out specific numbers from this legislation. Number one, we need to be very supportive of this as a primary kind of response from this body, that it's an important issue to us and the rest of the state to be viable in supporting our retirement system. Number two, I think Ms. Woodruff brought two more points forward, but I believe Mr. Culver, we've got somewhat of a draft that maybe we can look at an amendment to address those, but overall, our end of the night objective is to get a supportive resolution to the state, to the legislature, that this is an important issue. They're going to argue over the numbers. I think I'm not sure if $3 million is a number or not. I really don't, as long as it's a priority for them, they start dealing with it. But if we can add some additional, maybe I can hand it over to Mr. Culver and let's read through some changes and then discuss those, maybe refine them and then get done with it.
Mr. Culver?
Yeah, I've got an amendment on your desk. It's the resolution with some, basically the source of funds lined out from the, in the title, from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, insert a four after designated, and then on the second page in the therefore be it resolved clause, strike that last part of that sentence, in FY 2015 from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, and then the next further be it resolved, the reference to the Budget Reserve Fund. And then I would further add the recommendation to cap the existing rate contribution, and it, that would be another further be it further resolved, the Matanuska-Susitna Borough opposes any increase in the required PERS contribution by municipalities. PERS contribution rate, I guess, would be the proper language. So what that does is that's the legislator's job to argue and fight over what count it comes out of and how they fund it. We recognize there's a problem there. There's talks about stretching it out, what fund they go to. We support it with the concept. And we'd like to see our rate capped. And so I think we accomplished both of that in these amendments. This amendment.
It's an amendment on the floor. Mr. Sykes, to the amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I support the amendments that Mr. Culver has brought forward, as I do conceptually. My only question is, since you have deleted references to in FY15, there is another one at the bottom of the first page, a reference to FY215 budget cycle. Did you intend to strike that one as well?
No, my intent was to deal with the grammar around the constitutional budget reserve language so it would read grammatically. So budget year is probably appropriate this year in this legislative cycle. I was just dealing with the CBR in itself as another issue. Support of the concept, leave it up to them to decide where to appropriate from.
Mr. Sykes, that final whereas is speaking to Governor Parnell's proposed changes.
Yes, but I just saw the. I just wanted to clarify that that was also not being referenced, and I thank you for the clarification.
There's an amendment on the floor. Is there additional discussion on the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment carries. Back to the main motion as amended. Is there additional discussion? Is there objection to the main motion as amended?
Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Mayor, please proceed.
Now, having spent most of the day dealing with this down here, I just thought I would bring you up to speed. Right now, this is just a line item in the budget. There's no legislation supporting it that's being drafted as the process goes on. But it's certainly the governor's intent to cap this at 22 for the municipalities, and almost certainly if something isn't done to infuse money, that cap would very likely not stay in place because the expense is going to just get worse and worse without an infusion. But so they're formulating language that would confirm that, but also there's language that will also take away termination study expenses if this passes, and I think that makes it extremely attractive to at least the major larger-sized municipalities. So that's what I've learned today. And the other issue that's important, and I want to make sure it stays in our resolution, is that that money goes into a PERS dedicated account and not just a reserve account, because the legal opinion right now is that that liability, according to the new Gatsby rules, these PERS liabilities are going to have to start showing up on our books. And if that money doesn't go into a dedicated account for the PERS liability, the liability stays on both the state and municipality accounts and works against our financial status. So everybody's in agreement, even the governor, that this money needs to go into a dedicated PERS trust account. That's my comment.
Thank you, sir. Back to the main motion as amended. Is there any objection? Mr. Culver.
Culver, please. So I'm wondering if, to address the mayor's concerns, on the second page, therefore, at the end where it says appropriation to the state retirement system, if we should add dedicated PERS retirement account or something more specific. Maybe Tammy could come forward and shoot an arrow in the right direction.
To Mr. Culligan, I think what I would do is that last line, it says budget reserve fund to the state PERS retirement systems or account.
So we took out in FY 2014 from the constitutional budget reserve, so we're going to leave in or add back in budget reserve fund?
Well, that's right. That was taken out.
So we could add back in budget reserve fund to state retirement system?
Yeah, or if you don't want to stipulate where it's coming from, you could still leave the budget reserve fund out, but add after state
retirement system.
Yeah, public employees. Yeah, or you could add the word PERS, or you could add after state public employees and then retirement systems.
Okay, but what he's asking for is we were asking for a dedicated public employees retirement account. Is that is it dedicated now, or it's it seemed like that's what I heard was a little bit of wishy-washiness. So if we said add the word dedicated to that, or
Designated?
Yeah.
Dedicated, like a
non-constitutional. Okay, so designated PERS retirements account?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Deputy Mayor, if I could make an amendment just real quick.
Okay, if I could just talk to you on PERS includes retirement system in its acronym, so.
If I could make an amendment in front of state retirement system at the end of that sentence, put public employee state retirement system designated account.
Got that, Madam Clerk?
Mr. Deputy Mayor?
Mr. Sykes?
I don't know. I believe I heard the mayor say trust fund. And if the trust fund is the name of the account, we could use it. But I don't know if he was actually talking about it generically or if that is actually the name of the dedicated fund that he was suggesting we orient it to.
Just an observation.
Mr. Mayor? Yeah, the language that's being used down here is the retirement trust fund. If the money's deposited directly into the retirement trust fund, that's already there, it's protected.
So, Mr. Deputy Mayor, could we just take off system and put trust fund?
I think that meets the mail with what Mr. Mayor was saying. Lonnie, do you want to restate that like you think you understand it to be?
I think after the word, it's to the Public Employees State Retirement Trust Fund in fiscal year 2015.
Question's been called. It's clear to me those that are affected by this change are paying close attention. Question's been called. Is there any objection to calling the question? Is there any objection to the amendment to the main motion as amended? Hearing none, the amendment to the main motion as amended stands. The question is, shall you pass the main motion as amended? Is there any objection? Hearing none, it carries. Madam Clerk, final AM, please.
AM's 14017, authorize the Borough Manager to enter into an agreement with Elevon Incorporated for credit card processing and credit card point-of-sale machines for a period of 3 years.
Who pulled this?
I did.
Mr. Culver, please move it.
Move AM 14-017, authorizing the Borough Manager to enter into an agreement with Elevon, Inc. for credit card processing and credit card point-of-sale machines for a period of 3 years. And if we could, through the chair, ask for Shannon Beaudelet, the assistant borough attorney, she wrote, give us a little, Nick had sent us an email. There's some concerns in the legal department. The manager, apparently, maybe he'll speak for himself, but to go ahead and approve it. I think it's more like one of these deals where if you want to get this app for your computer, you click yes or you don't get it type of deal. But maybe you could explain to us what we're getting into.
The memorandum that went to the assembly was attorney-client privilege, and I believe that in order to waive that privilege, everybody or you guys would need to vote on it.
Through the deputy mayor to the assembly, Shannon is Ms. Bordelais is raising the point that the memorandum was attorney-client privilege, and so if the assembly wished to waive that privilege, it would do it as a body by a majority vote.
Can I ask a question to that, please?
Mr. Colligan, it sounds like we don't want to get too far in the weeds here before we take a vote.
Could you define client in this case?
It would be the borough as a municipal entity, and the assembly would be acting on behalf of that. And essentially, I think what Assemblymember Culver is asking is to lay out those concerns that were raised in that memorandum. And so we just, Ms. Bordelais, just wanted to make sure the assembly understood that by doing that, it's waiving the attorney-client privilege.
Microphone.
I apologize, Mr. Mayor. The point I was making, John Ashenbrenner, was that by having Ms. Beaudelet lay out the concerns raised in the memorandum addressed to the mayor and assembly over this matter, the assembly would essentially be waiving the attorney-client privilege to discuss those matters.
Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Mr. Colligan.
So, beyond that, if I could ask some just general questions. Have we I can't believe, and I know we're not, the first and only government organization to take credit cards and they have a contract, right? Have we called the attorney in Anchorage or other entities we know take credit cards and find out what they're, have we done that?
Yes, actually, the way we discovered Elavon was I reached out to Fairbanks and Anchorage, and Elavon had been servicing Anchorage, and we were also told the state of Alaska, and we got a copy of their contract with Anchorage, which, when we compared them to the rest that we had had, seemed quite favorable to us. And when we moved forward, entering into it, we were advised that our volumes for the landfill station were so low that we didn't kind of qualify for that contract that they had sent us, and they wanted us to enter into their short-form, non-negotiable agreement that they provided us that the memo was written about. So, yes, so, we have reached out to...
Okay, so the contract, just in general terms, isn't the same that we know other entities are using from the same organization. All right. That's my question.
So are we wrapped around the axles on this, or are we ready to move on?
Just through the chair, I don't know if to break confidentiality. Is the legal department comfortable with this contract? There's two issues. One is its procurement process. They waive the normal bidding process. And two, the contractual indemnity agreements and those kinds of things. Maybe that's a question for Mr. Ashenbrenner.
John Ashenbrenner, Deputy Borough Attorney. The what the memorandum tries to do is lay out these concerns that the Borough Attorney's Office has with this contract. The of course, whether or not those concerns raise enough concerns for the political will of the Assembly is a decision that. That lies with the Assembly itself. And one of the things that Mr. Spiropoulos raised in his email that accompanied that memorandum was that this matter hadn't gone out to RFP. Now, whether or not that process would yield proposals that would have better contracts, we don't know. But we wanted to convey these issues and let the Assembly mull them over and see if you wanted to go forward as it was or wanted to go to an RFP. And then Ms. Beaudelet can lay out in more detail what those concerns were. And like she conveyed, unfortunately, there was a fair amount of time and effort spent reviewing the contract that Anchorage had that was more favorable because they had a greater volume. And then they said, wait a minute, we want you to review the short form that they sort of say take it or leave it with. And so that's part of the reason it raised these red flags.
Mr. Manager? I think, you know, I'm the reason it's here. I mean, it's our law department's informing you because they are not real comfortable with this. We have been working on credit cards and working at different agencies for well over a year. This is not the only credit card company, and we have such low volumes. You know, if we're going to charge, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 a year, they're not going to change. Credit card companies are not going to change their policy procedures so we can use them for a little bit of money. So what you're doing is you're waiving the RFP procedures, because I think if we go through it, and we certainly can, it's going to delay this another 5 or 6 months, and we're going to be right back here because big corporations don't change their policies for a little bit of money. And that's what it comes down to. There are, in my opinion, there's some acceptable liability as manager I'm willing to take because this is an important issue for the Assembly. And we've had this discussion with Nick. Nick wants you to be aware that there is a risk if everything goes to Hades in a handbasket, there is some liability. But we are taking credit cards at a landfill for convenience for our citizens. Next, we're going to take them at the ice skating rink for people who don't have the $28 in their pockets, and next, for swimming lessons. So this is a small-time convenience for our residents that you have been asking for as assembly body for 7 years. And so I'm coming forward saying, yeah, it's worth the risk. Your attorneys are cautioning you, saying, but there's a risk.
We ready for the question? Mr. Sykes?
Well, geez, I was in business a long time, and I took credit cards, and when they kept pushing me on the technology, I said, screw it, I'm not going to do it. So I only took checks and cash, and I couldn't tell that I lost any business. Really, what is this costing the borough to accept credit cards? Is it a percentage? Is it a fee? Is it a flat fee in addition to a percentage per transaction? I mean, I did read the memo, and I did see the reason that this company seemed to be more reasonable because they understand what we're dealing with here in Alaska. But I don't quite understand the fees. And I read the paragraph on fees, and I didn't know what it meant by the time I got to the end of it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the best person to articulate how much it's going to cost the borough. The fees, the way it is set up for this company, it's called Interchange Plus. And so the interchange fee, the way I understand it, is a percentage plus a transaction cost that's charged by the banks and the credit card companies that's passed along. And then the plus is the 10 cent per transaction that the company that is processing the company, Elevon, would receive. And the interchange, from what I understand from these multiple contracts that we've looked at, is not negotiable, is a set rate, and it varies depending on the type of card, that there's like 300 different, you know, cards or something to that effect. But I have a spreadsheet that kind of tries to lay out the different percentage rates.
Ballpark, what are they?
Ballpark.
Or average or something?
Yeah, ballpark, like Discover is 1.6% plus 22%, or 22 cents. MasterCard is 1.66%. Visa is 1.54%. And then there's like a per transaction.
So that's not a huge dent in.
No, no.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you. Mr. Right, Halter, did you have a comment?
That's right.
Well, I was going to say, I'd moved away the attorney-client privilege. You know, we kind of beat that to death anyway and didn't pay attention to it. If they really tell
us
what the reason
is. Well, no, I'm sorry. The fee thing I do not believe is a attorney-client privilege.
Well, my ears are ringing and I'm glazing over. Are we ready to call the question? I mean, what's the Mr. Colbert? What?
No, he had a motion to waive the attorney-client privilege.
I would ask that we make a decision on this. Just listening to the rates, they are significantly less than commercial rates, I'll tell you that, number one. And I would ask that we support the manager to continue with the negotiations, and if there's a problem, come back to us. That's my take at the moment.
I just want to thank Nick because I know he has to listen.
There's a motion on the floor. Is there additional debate? Is there objection? AM number 14-017. Hearing none, Mr. Manager, march hence forward.
Remember our May 31st deadline. Hey, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem, I'd just like to compliment Shannon on excellently prepared memorandum, very good legal work.
Okay, thank you. With that, Madam Clerk, new business introductions, please.
For public hearing on March 4th, Ordinance 14038, Ordinance 14039 with accompanying Resolution 14023, Ordinance 1440, Ordinance 1441, Ordinance 1442, and Ordinance 1443. For public hearing on April 1st, Ordinance 14026 and Ordinance 14027.
Mr. Solomon, will you please
I move to introduce the legislation as read into the record by the clerk and set the public hearings for March 4th, 2014 and April 1st, 2014, respectively.
Second.
Thank you. Is there objection? Hearing none. Solomon.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, I move to confirm the resignation as follows. The Historical Preservation Commission, the resignation of Angela Wade.
Is there an objection? Hearing none. Vacancy report is moved. No reconsideration. No referrals. We are to comments. Staff comments. Seeing none. Assembly comments. But that will. I'm not going to run through the queue. Mr. Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I would just like to comment on a couple things. This last weekend, we had a medical emergency during one of our services at the church, and we had to call 911, and given the testimony this evening and the ongoing discussion we've had over the past several weeks with regards to this, I would like to commend the EMS responders and the 911 dispatchers and their assistance with our emergency at our parish. I do think it's shocking to find out that the beginning wage, minimum wage of a lifeguard is significantly higher than one of our emergency medical personnel, and I think that's something worth looking at this budget process that we're in. Also, I'm very pleased to see the public... Very pleased to see the public come out tonight and to be a part of this decision-making process, and the staff, I'd like to commend you for being here for such a lengthy amount of time. I'd also like to say my support for this new non-contiguous local improvement district. I think it's a good idea, and I hope that we continue to see many more of those. And also I'd like to just say, I saw the manager leave. I do really like the idea of moving this podium back as we sat and saw that. I thought that made a big difference. Yeah, I think we need to do something so we have better interaction with the people who take their time to be here and to speak with us. Thank you.
Mr. Culver.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Last week at the Board of Fisheries, your borough staff and Fish and Wildlife Commission delivered one of your top assembly priorities, getting more fish in the Northern District. Had some huge wins, fought back a lot of punitive measures in our streams and to our rights to dip net and those kinds of things. But more importantly, the board unanimously adopted several regulatory changes designed to move salmon north. So I want to recognize the members of the commission, Larry Engel, Howard Delo, Andy Couch, Ben Allen, Bruce Knowles, and Jennifer Eamon. And like the 12th man on that commission has now been Terry Neininger. He's kind of joined at the hip, even though he's not officially on, but he's been very active. Frankie Barker, staff. And the media support of Patty Sullivan and Stefan Hinman have just been awesome. I mean, they produced the booklet before the event started to kind of prime the pump, and then throughout the 2 weeks of board hearings, were very supportive in getting out our message. And our fisheries consultant, Mac Menard, is a very talented, experienced, retired biologist that can boil down the facts into very few words and very succinctly, and is a great communicator. So we had just an awesome team and just knocked it out of the park for the borough. Hopefully we'll be able to hold the line on that, and in 5 years or so we'll start seeing some really strong results. Even this summer, we're expecting to see quite a few more silver salmon in area streams. And that was made possible by administration and assembly support of the commission and the budgetary needs to support the commission while they're attending that two-week-long Board of Fisheries meeting. So hats are off to our staff and commission. Thanks.
Mr. Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I concur with Assemblymember Culver's comments about the Fish and Wildlife Commission. I'd like to also thank Mr. Culver for his work. I'd also like to thank the public for coming, and I'd especially like to thank a couple of people here that are still here, and that's Mr. Vindusk and Ms. Bacon. They're neighbors. They're on different sides of the issue. They got together. They worked it out. I love that. Thank you. I'd also like to thank the manager and the chief financial officer for helping explain things. I look forward to working with all of you on the budget. One thing I would like to ask at meetings, it seems I've been dealing with this borough now for about 25 years, and it seemed like we used to have staff reports that really put things in context when we had a public hearing. And I know that those can take time, and they can become an excuse for assembly members not reading their packet. However, I think that some of the confusion that we had last time could have been avoided, and I would really kind of like to see the tradition of getting a succinct description of a public hearing even before the hearing takes place from a staff member, and after the public hearing, if there's anything that has come up that raises a question that we hadn't considered, that we have the ability to ask the staff. And so I read the packet, and sometimes I think I understand it, but when it comes down to it, I'm not really sure. So thank you all for your patience, and have a great week.
Mr. Colligan.
So just real quick, under comments, my whole meeting I think has been comments, but I did want to take the opportunity, Mr. Culver read off a long list of folks, and I think he was also one of the hardworking folks on that committee, and very appreciative, but none more than this morning when he was on the radio, and there was a stacked crowd of commercial fishermen. And if you repeat the same misinformation many times enough, I guess it kind of becomes fact. But as his opposition was saying, blaming everything on the pike and the like, and culverts and fish crossings and roads and stuff, he eloquently kind of jabbed back with, well, all of that area, there are no roads over there, and there are no culverts and the like. You did a great job, even though I know you got beat up. But it was, for me, while I was working this morning, it was good entertainment, so thank you.
Well, with that, my only comment is I wish that some of the EMS responders would have stuck around. Okay, great. You know, I would say again, and I think there's several on this body that are on record, and we have taken some pretty bold moves over the last couple of years, increasing budget cycle before last to the tune of $1 million in raises. And there's a very detailed analysis underway right now to determine, and there's a sensing that there will be a cost savings by converting the on-call responder program to full-time positions, rather than having 550 on-call responders and having 80 or 90 or whatever it may be full-time positions, and having that as a full-on immediate response capability is very important for our community. And I was at Settlers Bay a couple years ago when a car in front of me squirreled out, went in the ditch, flipped several times, and the young guy inside was injured very severely. I was the first person there, and I called 911, and I was right across the street from the fire station, from the ambulance station, the training facility. And I kept waiting to see the door go up, and the door didn't go up. And I called 911 again, and the ambulance came from downtown Wasilla. Similarly, we had an explosion out at the LNG plant, out by the work camp. The responders came from downtown Wasilla and passed two EMS facilities on their way there. So the discussion will happen, the data will come, we will have a thorough vetting of this topic, but I can assure you that since I've been paying attention to politics around here, which has been about 20 years, I can say with certainty that this current assembly is more sensitive to that public need than has been in a long time, and we're willing to take that discussion up, and we are. So I appreciate the comments earlier. And when it comes down to essential services that the public expects their government to provide, it's infrastructure, public education, and emergency medical services. And helping those that can't help themselves sometimes, and that's the young and the elderly. And that's, I think, the core focus of this assembly, and you have my support on that and have since I was elected. So we'll have that discussion, and it will be vetted. Mr. Mayor, do you have any comments?
I do. I'm glad to hear that I'm not forgotten. And I'm sorry I wasn't there. It sounds like we had a good audience tonight. I would like to, first of all, agree and express our gratitude that the Board of Fish were responsive. And I think the message that we took, irregardless of species of fish or user group, was give our fish safe passage, and I think we're at least going to see a different paradigm here for a while. You will find in your red packets a very rough draft language on the West Susitna Access Reconnaissance Study. My intention for getting that in the packet tonight is because it will be on the next assembly agenda, but the comment period expires on February 28th, so if there's no objection, I would like to just let the state know that we will be acting on this later and submitting our input late, just so they can't say that we totally flaked out before the deadline. I think that's probably all that I need to say tonight, except that Dr. Paramo jumped on me. That resolution 14017 on the constitutional amendment ballot issue. There was a phrase in there that slipped in from statewide language that referred to the ailing school system. And I want you to know that I do not consider our Mat-Su Borough school system ailing. That's that leaked through from statewide language. And with that, I will wish you good night, and thanks for taking over, Deputy Mayor.
Deputy Mayor. I just wanted to
Hello?
Let the Mayor know that I do object to telling them that we're going to definitely support this resolution. I'm willing to say we'll consider it, but I don't think you should tell people that it's going to be one way or the other. So I do object to that.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Deputy Mayor,
Mr. Mayor, please proceed.
Yeah, my intent is only to notify them that our input will be coming late.
Very good. That's clearly understood. Okay, with that, we will stand adjourned at 9:33 p.m. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.